Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City. This is Film Grok. Our movie for this week is the 1979 Walt Disney science fiction classic, The Black Hole.
Dun, dun, dun.
Our esteemed panel for this week is...
Jim, esteemed Usterman.
And...
Tim McMillan.
And Duncan K. Fraser.
And Serge... I haven't seen this since 1979, Del Pierre. Our cue point for The Black Hole is, well, they have no logo at the beginning. So the phrase distributed by Buena Vista Pictures, Inc. comes up. As soon as it fades to black, we paused it there. So when we're ready to go, we'll count down 3, 2, 1, play, and then you can press play on your device of whatever sort, and you can to listen to us in sync with the movie, or you can to listen to us while you're basically plotting X, Y, Z, and other coordinates in outer space and trying to figure out whether there's a black hole out there, or whether you're trying to figure out whether we live in a black hole. There are some theories that our universe is in a black hole. You heard this?
No, Film but that's Grok. Pretty cool.
What's that, Jim?
Film Grok.
Is that what you're going to say the whole time?
In a
Film
black hole.
Grok.
That's right.
In a black hole.
Great. Welcome to Film Grok.
In a black hole.
All right, Tim, when's the first time you saw this?
I think 1979, the very first week it was released.
And did you see it in the second row?
Yes, second row center, my favorite spot in the theater. Yeah. Depends on the theater, but the theaters I frequented were...
It was before your eyes started to go.
Oh. Yeah, second row center was the sweet spot that, you know, you got to find the sweet spot when you are watching The Black Hole.
Which reminds me of... Eddie.
Or when you're just talking about black holes in general.
I'm pretty sure that was part of what Pee Wee Herman said.
Avoid...
When they
the gravitational
them.
Pull.
Never mind.
This title, it's an unfortunate title.
It really kind of is for
this
nowadays.
Is just gonna, this is going to be endless. Okay.
This is going to be the innuendo special,
especially when you
boys
say,
and girls.
When you bill it Walt Disney's black hole.
Yeah.
What was your phrase earlier, Serge?
You guys are going to have to teach me how to love black hole.
The black hole, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what I said earlier.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Uh-huh.
In all of our presences.
That's right.
Well, he was asking for our help.
It's our duty, right, you guys.
Because
apparently we have some level of expertise.
Well, because I got to tell you, I mean, you guys all love The Black Hole, and Tim, obviously, you know, you saw it in the
Absolutely.
Second row. It really meant something to you. And I saw this,
well,
and I was just like, you've got to be kidding me.
Okay, well, you go next then, Serge. When did you see it first?
I saw it in 1979.
I didn't say I was enamored of it. I didn't say it meant
the
world to me. I just said I saw it.
You saw
it.
Oh.
What I saw was the opening of the film is one thing, and what happens after that point is another in my mind. The setup is really cool. I dig the setup. And in the theater, the setup really worked wonderfully for the mood, the mystery, the eeriness of it, and then the effects and the visuals. Awesome. Then once they're on the Cygnus, once we get the little cute robots together, once we get the most illogical physics that the mind can wrap itself around happening, from that point on, it's a whole different movie to me. It's like Freaky Friday, the original.
Wire technology redefines physics. You should know this.
You know.
I was let down. I remember in 79, I walked away saying, I thought that would be a lot better.
So, when you're talking about black holes, though, reality doesn't really come into it. You know,
very
everything's
true.
All flipped backwards and upside
very
down.
Very true. If anyone's seen Event Horizon here, we all know.
Yeah, what is this?
How freaky things get.
What is this about black holes and people going crazy? Is this like something like
black holes
in a book where they say, oh, if you live by a black hole, everyone's going to go crazy,
right?
See,
I don't
it's
know.
True. Holes make Homer.
I didn't get that book.
Something.
I didn't get that manual. You know,
go crazy.
I think there was another one.
Mind if I do?
I don't know. You know, I'm just
no,
saying.
Yeah. I think maybe it's, if you want to get like really philosophical about it,
yeah.
The most interesting theorem about black holes involve alternate dimensions, right?
So is this going to be a deep black hole conversation?
Yes, it will.
It's going to be as deep as it gets.
Yep. So maybe it's that in the human experience, it is the best way to indicate that there is something in or around the black hole that defies our understanding in the context of the world and
maybe
existence cultural. As we know it.
You know,
it.
When I think of black holes, I don't think of deep philosophical
thought. That was
really
deep, though, wasn't it?
It was. I just don't. I mean, I think of, you know, there. It's one of the things in our physics in this universe, and, you know, it just sucks up all the light. But It's an interesting trope that someone's glommed onto in Hollywood. It's like, oh yeah, black hole, everyone goes crazy. As opposed to, how about if you just get sucked in and die? I don't know, you just stay away from it or something.
Well,
like
which
that.
Is that's a nice. Better popcorn film?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you don't have to be a brand of black hole to go crazy is my point, you know?
No, but how cool is that? You're in the depths of space. Mystery surrounds
I don't
the
mind
black
that.
Hole.
There's no
it
escape.
Makes you go crazy.
I don't, there's no escape but the black hole.
Well, once you go in the black hole, there is no
black
escape.
Black hole sucks it all in.
Mm-hmm. Nothing can escape.
I will say that this film, I think, is a perfect example of a reach exceeding what someone's grasp. It's ambitious, but for a different myriad of reasons, it fell short in its execution.
It was a noble effort. I mean, this was Disney's first basically adult, or they're going in the direction of an adult film with adult, somewhat adult themes, still genre.
It was their first PG film.
You know, but they saw, hey, Star Wars has done it. Yes. We're going to get out there. We're going to get our thing because we're Disney, so let's compete. And they had to evolve. I mean, the next big one after that, I guess, was Tron, and it still took some time, and it led to, obviously, Hollywood Pictures and Touchstones. They could actually go to more adult fare, but yeah.
It's like a limbo film, because it's in the middle. It's not a children's film. It's not an adult film, so they're on the fence, so it becomes limbo, and you don't satisfy either.
Yeah,
it's full potential.
That's probably what happened is that you're right. They didn't really satisfy either.
Not
unlike,
but I think probably just within the studio, there probably are, like, fights as to, like, why are we doing this or like that? So just trying to get through that was...
They went as far as they could go at the time.
Yeah.
And if you look at the context, this came out the same summer in the same year, Star Trek the Motion Picture and Alien.
Oh, Alien came out that year. That's right. Alien came out during that summer, and Star Trek was at Christmas.
This was
okay,
December.
You're looking at 1979,
yeah.
And you're looking at, you know, for context, and if you stack up Black Hole next to Alien, sorry.
Or Star Trek. So, you know, Star Trek.
Of course, then you take your kids to see the black hole because it's a Disney film, right?
And you're getting
And you get, you know, giant red robots like disemboweling someone. So, awesome.
You get death, carnage.
Which, you know, ultimately, I think this was a growing pain kind of thing for Disney. And I think, like you said, Touchstone and their other one came out of this.
Yeah.
So they could actually release, you know, stay true to their Disney, roots and release other adult things.
Which they had never faced before. I mean, you want to think, their most successful film before was Mary Poppins back in 64. And that had kind of straddled the kid market and the adult market because it was such a good film. And then they had other films like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and they were animated films. So it kind of dabbled it, but it always went towards children. Mary Poppins was kind of straddled it a bit.
Was
and
Sound
was able
of
to,
Music, was that Disney?
That was No.
That was Fox, 20th Century Fox.
That was 65. So here they came back around, obviously Star Wars, once again, Star Wars just changed absolutely everything. And this is definitely in the wake of that. And they made it the effort and, definitely I'm up for seeing it again and seeing, how it hits me, how it strikes me.
It's a product of haste. They were really trying to jump on the Star Wars bandwagon and it was, hastened in pre-production. It was rushed. And it was rushed in post.
And you can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we talked about it at the end. Looks as though it's a little bit rushed.
They had a much more ambitious ending for how it was envisioned, but it wasn't able to be executed.
Couldn't realize it.
Mm-hmm. Duncan, when did you say this?
Well, before I say anything else, I just want to say to all of you, you're welcome.
Okay. Thanks. That means
thank you, Duncan.
Something to us.
I brought this just for show and tell, and here we are doing it instead of.
Yes, strangely enough, we're going to do the Hurt Locker another time. But we're all like, hey, we got the black hole. Hey, want to do the black hole? So we end up doing the black hole.
And when someone asks you if you want to do the black hole, I mean, what
you
do you
say?
Yes.
You got
to
say yes.
You can't
because
say,
it's
can't
a rare
say no.
opportunity.
That's right. You have to say yes. Yes, we'll do the black hole.
Because the black hole will make you crazy.
Without exception.
Without exception.
So I saw this probably the first time in the 80s. I must have been, I'm pretty sure I saw it before we moved to Kentucky, so I must have been like 8 years old or nine. I probably saw it at my grandparents' house. Again, Disney film, so probably assumed safe. I was really freaked out by the Anthony Perkins death scene by robot. And that was, it's visceral. You don't see
gruesome,
blood, but
I mean,
you know what's
wow.
happening.
Yeah, really know what's happening. And I really, really latched onto the, I'm always a weapons guy. I love the little
even at age eight.
Heck yeah. I've been a weapons guy since day one pretty much. And They've got these cool, like, double laser guns that the little robot,
yes,
semi-stormtrooper mm-hmm. looking dudes,
yes,
on the ship
stormtrooper
have.
Ripoff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I loved those. That was really fun.
Do they spin those?
Yes,
yeah,
they do.
Yeah.
They do an Old West homage. Yeah. To, yeah.
And I don't know. I latched onto it in a similar way, probably, as far as imagination stuff. Not that this compares really to Star Wars. I understand it competing in the market, but I latched onto it in a similar way of just capturing my imagination kind of thing, because for a kid that age, you know, it really, like, you know, you can go places with it in your mind. There's plenty there mm-hmm. to work with. So it's always been one that's, like, not forefront, but definitely in my top list of films that I rewatch every now and then, just because, oh, I saw this when I was a kid and I really love a lot of things about it. And, you know, the little floaty robots are kind of cheesy, but since most of the people here are going to be like, oh, well, this is this and this and this and critique, I'm just going to be the devil's advocate antithesis to this and just try to be like the most positive voice.
No, that's fine. No,
well,
it'll be fun. I mean,
I
have not seen this. I think, Tim, you've watched it here on the occasion. I've caught like a few clips, but I literally have not seen it in, please help me do the math, 32 years.
So again, you're welcome.
We'll see what happens.
So, Duncan, you were really changed by the black hole.
Yes. I'm so depressed.
How
can the black hole not change you?
Here's the question.
Them's great words. Yes, you just can't beat that.
Nope, not with a stick.
Yeah, not really. Okay, so you all want to get started so you
if
can
beat
like
the black hole.
So I can get my education in the black hole.
Do it with a stick. Sorry.
Can I get my education now?
Oh, I'm sorry. What would you like to know?
We're here for you.
How to love the black hole.
Oh, just keep an open mind. The black hole.
Go with the flow, man.
The black hole, it will take you and send you into a place you didn't expect.
Ride the wave.
This is my last question, and then we're going to get started. So if I stare into the black hole, will it stare back at me?
Most definitely.
It depends.
It pretty much, that's what makes you crazy.
It's all an individual thing.
That's what it is. Okay, this has gotten juvenile.
Has
but
it?
I guess we all need to laugh every once in a while. Okay, I hold the.
Did we introduce ourselves, by the way?
Yes, we did.
Oh, we did. Okay.
You missed that part.
I guess I was looking at the black hole.
You were in the black hole.
You were focusing on it.
Yes.
So, according to program, we have just now finished the overture. If you're watching the edition that has the overture, right?
Pretty much.
Well, we didn't pause it there, though. I mean, at the
beginning.
But I'm saying
the overture has already occurred.
Yes.
And now we're past that for our start point.
Indeed.
Yes.
To get into the mood of the film, we've already heard John Barry's attempt at a John Williams Star Wars feel, which the studio pressed onto John Barry to go after and has used inappropriate
way. You're a
John
Barry fan, though.
I love John Barry.
He loves John Barry.
So you're not denigrating this.
I'm saying that, John Barry is not John Williams in that flavor, and he writes in a certain style. He can do victory, he can do euphoric, heroic things, but in a whole different minor key-ish type of moody way. And so the studio was saying, no, we want a Star Wars sound. So the overture is a very rip-off of John Barry trying to do a Star Wars thing to please the studio.
On that, can you think of a couple of movies that John Barry did that would be examples of his more usual work?
James Bond.
Bingo.
Yeah, of course, he's known for all the Bond films. But as far as like Out of Africa, mm-hmm. Dances with Wolves.
Wonderful. That's
very John Barry sound.
Body Heat.
Body Heat. Oh. Very moody, minor key, expansive stuff. That primarily is his style.
He has a huge catalog.
So to hear his overture from Black Hole, you go, John Barry, really?
You know, what's interesting, though, is picturing all of those films, this film actually, look-wise, could have done very well with his normal style. Maybe had they not tried to put
film,
the little
so
like more happier thing maybe for the kids in there,
this might have been
almost Kubrickian.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
It's a minor key film.
Take out
the little
kid like robot things and
wouldn't
some of the
nice,
cheese. And
wouldn't it be
it.
Nice if they gave him a chance to do the next, you know, if they're going to remake this, to do the score the way he would do it?
Well,
there's,
it's not
available.
A
problem.
Yeah, he passed away.
Oh, whoops.
Yes, he's not exactly Tim.
May
he's not available.
He went into the black hole not to come out, so.
That's right.
Where we all go eventually.
Oh, man. Okay.
Well, where this film ends, we'll see.
I guess. All right. So I hold the film Gronk remote in my hands because we had no projectionists this week. They're all on vacation. And
you
need
a break.
That's right. Okay. So I will count down now. 3, 2, 1, play.
Now, this was awesome in a theater, guys.
It was.
This
absolutely
blew the audience away, and they got motion sickness on a huge screen with this grid. And this is the first time that computer graphics were used in a feature film on this scale.
Oh, this was before, that's right, it's before Tron.
Yeah, this is. Tron was like 81, 82.
So to see this grid and to see what it does,
oh, yeah,
and then it rotates, and
oh,
the entire
goodness,
theater looked like the audience in front of you was tilting.
That, oh, it, that, my
that
goodness.
Is, and all it is, it's, I mean, all it is, it's basically, was it raster graphics? And, I mean, but it's falling where the path you would take if you
right
were
there.
Caught in the gravitational field of a black hole.
Right, which is a cool opening. And on that rotation, oh, everyone got sick to their tummies right here. Because the star field, what it's doing in comparison to the grid.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
huh.
That is actually
we
some
did
really
not
good
see
work.
This.
Yeah.
This is a new way of looking at animation.
Wow.
It's making me sick
would
right
not
now.
Not have thought.
Oh, you still got the rest of the film to go, Serge, for that.
Oh, different kind of sick.
Looking at it now, I almost expect those Tron grid spiders to like come Frank up and Phillips. Start coming after you.
I think this is better. This is like, well, this thing is, this is pure science right
exactly.
now. You're actually following a you know, a path. I'm assuming this is physically accurate.
And may I say, I was so excited at this point. At this point, man.
But what's great also is that
when in the theater, I was beside myself.
But you know what this is doing? Nice. Actually, this is telling us where the film will end.
Uh-huh.
Right.
That is how the film ends. So we've just seen how it ends.
Right.
They
it's
actually
a good foundation.
They planted the end at the beginning. Now, yeah. I know the star field is a painting, but I actually like it. It looks really
well,
good.
What I have a problem with, Peter Ellenshaw, who did all the effects, who I love his stuff, he is Mr. Disney when it comes to special effects. All the matte work, all the paintings, all the effects stuff. Excellent star stuff compared to the models, but he chose blue. And you'll see other shots where it's like bright blue rather than a black space.
But that's what I'm saying
space.
Is I don't mind because it. That's strangely enough, I don't mind.
You don't
for some
you
reason.
Like that? Take.
I don't know why. I do.
To me, it's a very Disney thing. It's a very cartoony thing. So,
but I'm kind of okay with it in a way, and I can't even tell you why. And I remember being okay with it back then.
And there's Roddy McDowell's voice
as Vincent. What does Vincent stand for?
Oh, good heavens. Something really lame. Sorry. Hey, wait, I'll tell you.
Something information
yeah.
central
needed centralized.
Yeah, centralized, but it's terrible.
Vital information vital needed centralized,
that's
right?
Necessary.
Necessary,
vital
centralized.
Information necessary, centralized.
Yeah, that's
really
not
lame.
Vincent.
Comma. There's
that's,
a comma in that acronym.
That's Joseph Bottoms.
Oh, my God. It looks like something from a...
Oh, there's...
Like Thunderbirds Are Go.
And what's that guy's name again?
That's
Robert Forster.
Who was in
right.
Jackie Brown, and there's Yvette Mimieux, yep. who I really like, but I really hate her hairdo.
It's very, the kinky perm thing didn't
right.
really
yeah,
show her off at her best.
Oh, there's everybody. Then, Perkins.
There's Ernest Borgnine.
Good old Ernest Borgnine.
Oh, interesting that he makes a Dante's Inferno reference right here, because the very end of the film basically references back to Dante's Inferno in a way.
Right.
Oh, there's Ernest Borgnine with a mustache.
Yes. By the way, Ernest Borgnine goes crazy in this.
What is it again with the black holes driving me people crazy?
Crazy for black
and
holes.
There's the Anthony Perkins who, I don't know, he didn't do that much work in the 70s, did he? Well, he did a little, but...
I wouldn't say he was doing leading man work.
Right.
He would pop in and out of stuff.
A rip in the fabric of space and time. See, that's mysterious and cool. You never know.
Well, I think
what's
back then everyone didn't really know about black holes too much, and so that's why it was intriguing. Oh, you know.
Of course.
I mean, yeah. Now we all know about black holes.
Very mysterious.
We still don't understand them.
Not entirely, because now
the wires.
Yeah, I was about to tell you guys.
Yeah.
That's our first wire sighting right there.
And this you'll see a lot.
And this is SD. It's not even Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Wait. Not only do you see the wires, but you see their connections to his support on him.
Wait, what are we talking about? I missed it.
Oh, no,
he was floating.
You can still see
and you can still
right
see
there.
The wires back there. Yeah.
Yeah, you can pick the wires out pretty much as easily as when we were watching Logan's Run and the carousel scenes.
Wow. I mean, well, I don't remember, so. So now we're getting all of the...
Backstory.
The backstory pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the graphics are pretty good.
I remember it was a big, cool deal that it was like a hologram in front of them that they're looking at.
Oh,
yeah,
right?
No, it is cool graphics. I don't like the robot, but it's okay.
Oh, I have problems with that.
I mean,
too.
It's very clear that they're trying to capitalize on, character and thematic elements with Star Wars.
They wanted to do an R2-D2,
making like a little different. Well, you know, the hologram projected for them to look at, a little tiny, cute robot. you know.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, I got to tell you, I mean, this is a Disney film, and we're seeing these actors in a Disney film at the time was like, huh?
I think it was.
Because everyone looks like B actors who were in Disney films. No, you know, A-list, so
I
to
think
speak.
From a studio standpoint, they said, okay, oh, script, effects being rushed, the film, I know, let's get legitimate big-time names to make it look more legitimate than
which,
the film itself.
Probably accounted for a good portion of their budget, which didn't you say, Jim, earlier was the highest
like
budget
million,
film
I
that
think.
Disney had done
at
that
point?
Yeah,
at that point, it was right. 20 plus.
And just like 2 years, 2 years or 3 years before, Star Wars had cost $10 million.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was it. It was $10 million. It was like, oh, no, it's a lot of money.
What was their advertising budget?
For Star Wars?
Yeah, do you know?
Who knows? Once they saw it, I'm sure they like blew out the everything.
This was six. So it was 20 for the 20.1 or something for the production, and then 6 for the advertising.
It's about 30%, so just a little.
Now, I don't remember any toys from this. They had to have had merchandising for this, right? Disney film?
I would assume.
I don't know. I think there was merchandising now. Now, of course, everything
is
now, merchandised.
Well, now, I mean, it's like...
After Star Wars, the merchandising of Star Wars, classic. I'm sure Disney tried to jump on that bandwagon with Black Hole, but I don't remember little Vincent robots.
I don't either. You know, seems like I would.
You know, it's actually...
I mean, because I was a kid already when this was out, so maybe... I don't know. I don't remember any.
It's interesting looking at the black hole and seeing the swirl around it. Oh, that's a nice trick with her coming down like
but look for the wires.
There's the wires.
Oh, still, really she still
bad.
Had to do that maneuver. So
it's really
right.
Bad.
That's true. That was a good maneuver.
That was a good maneuver. I like the fact that we're looking at the black hole and how the light, essentially, they kind of did a little, I guess, a little accurately. The light's not escaping from it, so it's like it's black around it.
Which is really convenient for the matting
kinda
process.
Sort of?
Yes,
actually,
right.
That's
very convenient.
Oh, wouldn't?
No, you wouldn't see that.
You wouldn't see the swirl?
No, you'd see the stars. The black hole, really, see a bit of this swirl, maybe, depending, but you wouldn't see that black area around the swirl.
So you wouldn't see the, okay.
And being pre-CG, is cool that they did the swirling effect.
True.
I'd like to know the breakdown of that effect, how it was done.
Well, it's animation,
because it works. And, you know, even when the ship is passing over it, you don't really get any, like... matting degradation.
Well, it's a good rotoscope.
It's good.
Yeah. I mean, I like the design of the whatever this
it's control
space,
room.
The control room. I don't understand why there's a center thing or where it's supposed to go there, but
well, you know, the shape of their craft is very much like the common like moonlanders that everybody had seen on the news up to that point. So I think it was I think it had more
that's
to do
nice.
With stuff that people were familiar with.
See,
my favorite
that is
part,
really nice.
This is my favorite part of the whole film.
That is really nice.
The silhouette reveal.
See, I don't mind the Starfield. I know it's a little on the artistic. I mean, it's got.
I think it's moody
quality.
As hell. So for that, I give it. It's artistically
absolutely.
Moody. So I'll give them that.
Yes, because space looks like nothing. It's a thing.
Yeah.
So here they
really
space
heightened
look like
it.
Something.
It's very stylized, very heightened.
And
so.
In that sense, I don't mind.
Well, also you know when you're out in space with no atmosphere to obscure it, you do see a lot of the. Nebulae and like space dust and stuff like that. Like it's a lot of added texture to the star field. It's not always just a blank, you know, black and little points.
I love the
the stars are
the practical star field out the window.
Not too good.
They got real stars for that, you know.
I like that they have a lot of shadows in here. It is a little brightly lit on their faces, but
it's not so flat. Look at that. Now this is ACES, that automated camera effects system. That was created for the black hole for motion stuff.
Oh, yeah. Elaborate on that.
Well, with a star field behind it.
That's great. Look at that.
And here's John Barry kicking in his black hole theme, the space waltz. This is, in a theater, this was really awesome.
I'll bet it was.
No, it's in a very nice shot.
This is their Star Destroyer traveling shot.
Right.
And this does sound like it does sound quite a bit like a Bond thing.
Yes, it does.
There's John Barry.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point, Jim.
And I like the strings. The strings in this theme is like it's pulling you in. Listen to that arrangement. You're going forward and you're going back. Forward and back. Forward and back. So it's like you're being sucked into something.
Well, but
it's
like
it's a great musicalization of the black hole.
But I like also that they're basically, this is a little on the boring side, but the fact that they're going along it and they've got the spotlights, it helps us see it. In other words, we're learning the ship while they're going
alerting the ship?
I guess, yeah.
I think it is great stuff for scale. Oh,
that's great where they shoot at an angle like that because like in so many space films, it's always level as though you're flying in an atmosphere. And I think the most recent Star Trek film is probably the best example of just odd angles, just like you would run into. Wow.
But this is like Star Trek: The Motion Picture, which came out the same year, where they did the whole thing in the shuttle, where they checked out the whole ship.
Oh yeah,
where Scotty took Kirk.
This gyroscope all around shot, it. And Vincent stays level, but the ship rotates around him,
which is really funny considering where's the gravity.
Yeah, there's no level.
There's not supposed to be any.
The design of the Cygnus is an awesome design for Peter Ellenshaw to have come up with for the ship. I think it's highly dramatic, highly impressive. Mm-hmm. I like the grid, the piping, the texture, and it's a very gothic feel. It has a gothic architecture to it. It's very classy.
Yeah, I can see the gothic thing, yeah.
Did Dykstra work on this?
Not that I'm aware of.
Who did the special effects?
I don't know of any name specifically that is.
So it's all Disney?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Okay.
That can't be good.
Well, that's a bad day.
Bad.
Yeah, that's animation. That's right. And
fade to black credits.
And that's 50 minutes in, and the film ends. Okay. Wait, is Vincent like Huey, Dewey, and Louie in Silent Running?
It's a cartoon take on Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Yeah.
That wire is supposed to be there.
Supposed
that's,
to be.
That's actually.
Now this is cool. Yeah. There's your Disney animation.
Yeah. I love that on the little ball.
On the ball, yeah.
Things,
on his supports there. That's awesome.
You know, he'd be fine if he didn't have those eyes.
Yeah, it's the eyes.
It's kid friendly. It's big eyes represents non-threatening. So that's Disney's. Every Disney animated character has big eyes.
Are you saying Vincent's Jar Jar?
I don't think so, because Vincent's actually a useful character in the plot.
But Jar Jar is useful because he brings the
wires.
end of the Republic.
No, you know what Jar Jar would have been useful is if in the very first film when they ran into him, Qui-Gon said, "Oh, that would make a really nice coat." That's how Jar Jar would have been useful. Thank you.
Oh, wait, hang on. Who's
Kate's ESP?
Wait, she has ESP?
Yes.
Okay.
And she's communicating via ESP
with
a robot.
Okay.
Hello, Disney.
All right, you've now lost me.
Hello, Disney.
Sorry. His eyes are going red.
This is, you know, kid stuff.
It is actually does get into the... It does get into
right.
the kid. Oh, my... Okay. All right. Okay.
You got to go with it, buddy.
I'm just going to let the John Barry music take me along. I like... You know, if I ignore the wires, this is all pretty cool.
Yeah.
As long as I don't listen to the dialogue, maybe I'll be okay. I can watch it. Actually, watching is okay.
Man,
listening
we're
to
only
the dialogue,
like 20 minutes in and you're already there?
The dialogue has first draft written all
I'm
over
sorry.
It.
I'm sorry.
Does.
If she's a psychic,
does,
if she's a psychic and she's talking to the robot, it's a little much.
Yeah,
I know they got pretty far.
Now so.
Oh, no.
Are
we going to lose him?
Yes.
The tether.
You wish.
You don't know.
You wish. Don't get your hopes
it's
up too
pins
far.
Pins and
there.
Needles, man. Pins and needles. You don't know. He's a hero. He must die.
Robert Forster. Now, he had been in a TV series in the 70s called... I don't remember. It's going to come to me. But he was a TV star. Didn't get his due.
See... He should have used the metal cord instead of just that wimpy nylon one.
They should have used high tensile steel?
Something.
Oh, something like that.
That's horrible. That's a horrible moment right there. What are you made of? That exchange. That's so bad.
Yeah. See, I was watching and I didn't see it. So if I just watch it with... Visually, it works better. Oh. Okay. That was a Star Trek sound.
That was
effect.
A Star Trek sound, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
that was a door opening.
That is one hell of a magnet, may I say.
Yeah.
It's actually resisting
black hole.
Him being pulled into the black hole, that magnet.
This is where the logic begins.
Right?
Should we start here? With
and
this
the
film?
Winch and the servo that's like pulling him up. Bad
I mean,
ass.
I mean, in terms of the plot, I mean, you know, that they get close and they've basically lost control of their ship and getting sucked in, so they have to land
nice.
On the ship.
Yeah, this
that's good.
Is
I mean,
it's
a good plot device.
Look
that's
at this.
Great.
Like
see, that's mysterious as hell.
Model. Oh, yeah.
That's
love that.
Really cool.
That's actually reminiscent of Alien right there.
Mm-hmm. The Nostromo.
Mm-hmm.
Very
so,
much so.
I mean, there are
now, look
good
at this.
Lice. Look at
listen
that.
Listen to the sound cue. Listen to music.
Yes.
I don't know if it's here yet.
Okay.
It's about to happen, but he does this euphoric surge in the orchestra when the lights come on the ship. It's really cool.
I forgot about
wait
it.
How big that model is.
Wait for it.
There. In a theater? Oh, that was awesome.
That was just great, cutting to the robot hiding his face.
What is this ship made of glass?
Again, it's aesthetic. It's not functional. It's an aesthetic thing.
Yes, it is, Jim. Yes. Why?
It looks
because
cool.
Because it's cool.
Well, yeah. But we're getting the clash right now.
And do you know how much power that would take?
But I'm just, we're getting the clash of basically old and new Disney, if you want. Basically. It really is. And we're just seeing basically a mix of both. Starting to see it. I mean, this, you never saw this in an old Disney film. But that's why I mentioned Star Trek. The whole thing was to see, ooh, we can do this now. Let's look at this.
See, that plate exceeded the monitor. It went into the set of the background plate of what he was looking at. It was really bad optical. But when you say Disney hadn't really done anything, to me, this is a lift from one of their previous properties. What can we do to get this film out fast? What can we have? Plot? 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
They did that in the 50s.
I know, but I'm saying, and that they did that long ago, the same plot, basically, of James Mason's character and the Nautilus, the ship, and his crew, and they just transposed the story into outer space, basically.
And put it at a black hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's 20,000 leagues in the black hole, basically.
Okay, I can deal with that. But 20,000 Leagues had I think it was Robert Stevenson, right?
Who directed that, I would assume.
I think it was Robert Stevenson, who also did Mary Poppins.
Yeah, it was their first live-action film, was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea for Disney. And the first film shot in CinemaScope for them.
You know what? That's actually 20,000 cool
Leagues?
Mm-hmm. Ooh. It's 255 to 1.
I haven't seen any bad rotoscoping yet, which normally in a space film of this time, you would have seen something so far.
Would you compare to Logan's Run with opticals? Yeah, this is much better.
Exactly. Well, maybe it helps that Disney's an animation based company, so maybe they've just got people that are more
savvy. They have people who rotoscope all and they know, day long, or they had.
Well, for someone who's an animator, doing rotoscope would be like breathing. It'd be
that
easy,
is a terrible looking model.
Could you make models?
Yeah. You're just hating on the model because
you're
jealous.
Which is, the Palomino or the Cygnus?
Palomino.
Oh, okay.
Palomino. Well, it's very, very basic.
Well, the problem is all of this is way too lit. It should be darker so you can hide the imperfections. That's the problem.
Mm.
Excuse me. You know, that's why you dimly light everything, because then it just shows all the problems. And the scale is given away.
If you want to see the one outer space film.
That's a fancy gun.
Laser pistol. I like it. I like it.
That lights things the most that shouldn't be lit. Yeah, take a look at the green slime sometimes. It's absolutely horrendous. They light it so much that they expose their deficiencies and they magnify every
but
one of them.
But that's why Alien is so dark, other than it gives the mood. Alien's so dark so it doesn't give away the fact that the ship.
It pays off technically, and it pays off in spades
and you don't
mood-wise.
And you don't see the creatures, because the creatures weren't full body things, and it just keeps it all mysterious. Yep.
If you look at Vincent's little writing for his model, he's apparently the luxury edition, 394. It says Vincent L.E., 394.
96.
I thought it was, oh, is it an F?
No, I thought it was
396.
Light edition, not luxury edition.
Now watch, he's a stud. Watch.
Ooh,
Limited edition. Look out. Cool.
What else did Joseph Bottoms do?
Who did the paper chase? Was that Joseph Bottoms or Sam Bottoms?
No, that was Sam Bottoms.
Okay.
Is that a gigantic Fresnel light up there?
I know. It looks like it to me.
Uh-oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now they're sealed
up. Yes, apparently it is.
You know, you are correct because it... Ooh.
Woo.
Well, there goes the gun. And there goes the robot. Yay! Oh, well.
Comic relief.
Oh, this is killing me. That's Roddy McDowall, right?
Yes.
Oh.
The high point in his
career. I love watching Ernest Borgnine, because whatever he does, he is a great actor. He really is. I mean, he brings it.
He's solid.
He's totally solid. There's just like, he's there.
And look at that guy's body of work. Oh my gosh, he's been in everything in every decade.
Including the Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Including that.
So
imagine that.
Why was Vincent just shot at?
He has lasers in two of his arms in the front.
Right. So
the,
did they just
the guns
take those
shot
out?
Those, yeah.
Oh, okay.
This reminds me of Forbidden Planet.
The Krell. They're going to the Krell laboratory. Nice reveal.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, yeah.
I mean, wow. That is cool. Now, that's a painting.
Mm-hmm. That's one of Peter Ellenshaw's mats.
Yeah.
I love the ominous score right then.
Oh, yeah.
It's very effective. It's not complicated, but it's effective.
That's an interesting door.
Oh, here comes the hero.
Is that Joseph Bottoms? No, it's someone else. It's been a while.
Our stormtrooper ripoffs.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, you're right.
I do like their double barrel weapons, though. Those are pretty fun. I think I remember making some of those out of, like, constructs when I was a kid and watched this.
Well, you know,
you
actually, made your own.
You know what they remind me of? Actually, is in THX 1138. Has anyone here seen that?
I have not.
Have you seen it, Duncan?
I sadly know. It's been in my queue for ages.
You guys
and
have
got to
see it. It's
a bad man.
Well, because essentially the cops, they're not cops, but they're robots like that, too.
Okay.
So.
I was going to watch it, and then the prequels came out, and I got mad at George. And
No. Oh.
I don't know. I never circled
okay,
back.
Okay, everyone's homework is watch THX 1138. Oh,
why am I going to watch a sound system?
Yeah, seriously, what's it going to do?
Man.
Hey, man, that's a good point. What in the world?
This is a nice
wait,
shot.
The THX sound came out.
This is really cool. I mean, if I was traveling this tube, I'd be puking my guts up because there's space on the other side of that wall. But then again, I'd be traveling in space, so I would have gotten over it. That's really, look at the perspectives. It all really carries through well.
And this is all the ACES system.
Yeah. Oh, look, I like that the
miniature
like that. Look at that.
Of the ship, I think, yeah.
Oh, I wanted to see it go down. If they just took that robot out, everything would have been fine.
Actually, if they take two robots out, the Slim Pickens character is the one that does me in.
No,
I can actually stomach Roddy McDowell, but the Slim Pickens character, I checked out of the theater.
Yeah,
I was just gone.
The Slim Pickens one is the Jar Jar, if you had to pick a Jar Jar of this film.
Okay, so it's in that sense. I mean,
it's the jumping the shark Jar Jar.
I mean, I saw this at 18. I saw this at 18. So, I mean, I guess if I saw it at 8 or 5, I'd like it because, it's like an adult film and it's got a robot. It's cute this way. So I could take it. So now, maybe this is a kid's film.
It takes you off guard, though, because it's palatable by kids, a little bit scary, until you get to the part where the guy gets eviscerated.
And how old were you when you saw this?
Probably like 7 or 8.
Okay, so the dinge we're talking about.
Well, I can see that being very traumatic for a 7-year-old.
Well, and not only that.
Nice set. Set alert. I'm sorry. Go on.
This is a very
beep,
sort
beep,
of.
Beep, beep, beep. It is a nice set.
Just to prepare, well, anybody listening to this probably has seen Black Hole before.
You better have because we're spoiling everything.
Right? The what were we calling him? His name in this, the other robot, the trashed robot.
Slim Pickens. Oh,
that's awesome.
Pretty, yeah. That's cool.
That's cool a mat set. Combined with the set.
That is really cool.
The smashed up robot later is sort of a cross between Jar Jar and Mater from Cars.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Talk like Mater. Kind of knows what's going on. Kind of now.
Don't remind me. Yeah.
These panels are very sort of Frank Lloyd Wrighty.
The set is really cool. Huh? It is.
Yeah. No, I love the sets in this.
Well, because it doesn't look like other sci-fi films, with little lights blinking on and off. I mean, here it's actually...
That screams epic.
It does.
That's
it does.
It's artistic.
This is the part... It's been ominous, but it's about to get a little bit scary right here.
Good. What happens?
Oh, there's Max.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we get to meet him.
This is... Uh-oh.
Okay, retarded.
Is this Slim Pickens?
Excuse me.
No. This is the cool robot. I like this robot.
This one is the dangerous one.
He asks you.
I find it interesting that the robot that serves Maximilian Schell's character is named Maximilian.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Which actually there's a good joke about at the end of the movie, and I'll try to remember it when it shows itself.
Why does he ask for Charlie Pizer when there's only one Charlie? I'm just saying. Now, like is that the black, we can see the black hole. Actually, what this reminds me of is obviously it came afterwards, but Deep Space Nine. They had whatever the wormhole to whatever part of the other part of the universe. They had the same thing. They had the swirl around it, which was probably more consistent than that.
Black holes are generally like the most popular thing to discuss now is the whole wormhole theory of black holes. I hear that more often than not. I think that's what's popular at the moment.
Do you talk about it with your friends?
Sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Depending on which friends.
Okay.
Now, if you want to see an awesome...
Quantum physics and all that?
awesome Maximilian Schell film. The first thing I saw him in was Judgment at Nuremberg.
Yes.
And he's riveting in that film. He's very, very good. Yeah. And the other film, Five Fingers, he was in. That's an older film. But remember him in Deep Impact?
Oh, he was good in that.
Which one?
He was the father, Tia Leone's father in Deep Impact.
And he was
I thought he was very cool. They had the moment together on the beach, and I thought it was just, he did very, very well in that. It was very moving in a effects film, his character, what happens on the beach.
He seems to have that, like, massive intensity without even trying.
Yes, he has presence to burn. He has presence. And his sister is Maria Schell, who, she was one of the Krypton people in Superman. And she died just recently, but she was, I think she was in, yes, and she was in Cimarron, Anthony Mann's Western, I think she was in that.
Check out this lighting where they're highlighting his eyes. Do you see that? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but.
I'm done.
I just wanted to hope they do it again. See that?
Yeah, it has a snoot light.
Yeah. Well, that's a Star Trek, first season. Well, no, they did a like deep slash on that. He was actually in a film called The Odessa File back in the early 70s with John Voight, where he played basically a Nazi war criminal.
Wow, he got those a couple of times then between Judgment and Nuremberg with that subject matter. And
yeah, I'd like to see Odessa File again, see how it holds up. But it was a pretty good film. And John Voight plays a journalist who's chasing him down. Was actually based on a book that had just been, it was a bestseller. So look, you know, those panels look very Piet Mondrian.
Who's that?
He's an artist. Mondrian.
What would I know him from? What has he done that I would have seen?
From paintings like this.
Yeah.
It's very Mondrian-esque. Mm-hmm. Very, but only kind of more intense.
It's a lot of light. Cool light.
It's beautiful.
It is back. I mean, it's like a stained glass window.
Yeah, gorgeous background. So that's why I was thinking Frank Lloyd Wright sort of.
Well, actually, it is Frank Lloyd Wright-ish also. Yeah, actually, it's like a combination because Frank Lloyd Wright also did his stained glass windows with those thin stops like that. Mondrian actually took a little wider shapes. He would take squares of different size and rectangles and combine with color schemes and do that kind of thing.
Partridge Family Bus.
Kind of, sort of. That's a lame, lame comparison.
I love the rotating elevator.
I can't even believe you said Mondrian and Partridge Family Bus in the same breath.
I actually have a Mondrian mug at home.
Yeah, Mondrian's great.
Now, on Maximilian, those flaps, are those his propulsion?
Yeah,
and he's adjusting it
for
how he's
motivating. Yeah.
Those are like his propulsion things. That's one hell of a viewport. I like the viewport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the animation on that black hole is just so...
Yeah.
I mean, you...
It's compelling.
Why did... It's compelling,
it looks
but
unreal,
why did they clean
it up? But it
doesn't
look like animation.
Well...
Really.
It's a little hyperactive.
But, you know...
I mean...
Well...
What does hyperactive mean?
On
meaning it's pulling focus. I don't think it would be that visually active.
Well, again, it's heightened. We're looking at everything being heightened. Yeah. And what is the name of the movie?
Oh, black.
Who's the star?
The black. What? Oh, no. So is this all basically scientifically feasible? Let's just go for it.
Oh, God.
No. Can you post yourself at this point outside of a black hole and not get sucked in?
The main thing, the main technology point that we don't have that makes this possible is the whole anti-gravity generation thing.
Okay, I'll buy
that. Because that makes the robots float, and it makes the ship hold its position.
Okay.
And if you had that, there's a slew of other things you could do that we just have no way of doing right now.
All
right,
so, okay, I can buy it there. All right, so basically, you know, outpost by the black hole and just very nefarious, evil environment.
Mm-hmm.
Robot standoff.
Yeah.
I love the hip lingo.
You cool it. Oh, man. Stating it. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Dang.
And there we have a little foreshadowing.
About, right? About the match between the two of them?
Oh, yeah. Later,
That's actually very nice, the way they have the shallow depth of field with the ship in the background, with the effect. Now that's interesting, actually, that the shift in power. In other words, they come onto his ship, and now they've essentially lost pretty much their power.
If there was any doubt before, when they, you know, now it's definite. Basically just said without saying it's, you know, directly, I own you.
Yeah.
You know, you're in my world.
Yeah.
Of course, later Vincent, you know, kicks Maximilian's ass. But
that's spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
No, but this, I mean, that's an interesting... I mean, I think we've seen it before, but it's always an interesting story where you're stranded and then you have to basically depend on somebody else's, you know, benevolence or malevolence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're just showing off now with being able to do that stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Look, actual digital.
Which they mean nothing. Those numbers are just flashing on and off there.
Of course, just like the ones in the operating room in Logan's Run that we just saw, only they weren't digital.
Well,
you
3 years.
Moving numbers. It means
3 years.
Yeah, I know, right? Such a big difference.
That's all the difference. But even then, you know, I mean, that's the, you know, when anyone has any kind of display, what's on there. I mean, that's why it's better to not have anything explicit like numbers or that. I don't know. Because then you're just inviting problems, or have it actually be something and just be done with it. As opposed to have it be gobbledygook.
Well, this is actually registering the gravitational flux of the wormhole.
I knew you. I knew it was something. All right,
dude, it's a giant scientific vessel.
That's right.
Feasible.
It would do that.
We could probably come up with like 100 things off the top of our heads right now.
This reminds you of like Babylon 5 a little bit. You know,
interesting.
Giant.
Oh, there's the
rolls.
John Barry music. It's really cool.
Of course.
Those strings. That's his standard trademark sound.
I feel like I'm in a James Bond film.
Right.
Oh, yeah, huh? Like, this could be just James Bond walking down a hall somewhere.
And quite frankly, what Max reminds me of is not necessarily Star Wars, but...
Oh, here it comes.
Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
Cylon.
Yeah.
Cylon.
Totally. Maximilian, definitely. And this was before that series, right?
No, this
or was
after.
And this
after?
Really?
The series was in 78.
Okay.
All right, gentlemen, I'm just going to check out for the next few minutes.
Because this is...
I'm not going to...
The ridiculous
your favorite
robot.
Character's about to come on, Tim.
Maybe this is where... Maybe this is a drinking movie? Is that what it
I
is?
I think that it really is. I think that, like... I think this would be one where you watch it, and every time someone says, like, either Black Hole or Maximilian, you have to take a shot.
Or or ECS controller and valve propeller. Seriously, that's a Cylon. Painted red.
Floating. And
so Battlestar Galactica
et cetera,
hit
et cetera.
When?
That was 78. That's okay. When it started. It was like once Star Wars came out, it's like, we're gonna rip this off right away.
And just a tip, anyone who does wire work, don't overlight your sets.
Yeah, there's that.
It's a basic principle, and any...
Oh, speaking
look
of,
this.
Check it out. Check it out. All three wires.
You know,
he
looks like Cartman.
He does
look like
he
Cartman.
He looks just, oh my gosh.
He's got Cartman's eyes.
I wouldn't doubt it. They make references to old, like, 80s sci-fi all the time.
Really?
And this is close enough to 80s. I'll bet you anything that influenced Cartman.
Very Krell-like.
Oh, that is.
We're looking down the...
The shaft.
The shaft.
In the black hole.
In the Death Star.
In the black hole.
Near the black hole. They're planning to go in.
Let's take the shaft
and enter the black
wherever
hole.
There's a black hole, there's got to be a shaft.
Pretty much.
Silence falls.
Yvette Mimieux. I will just focus on Yvette Mimieux.
By the way, the lighting right here reminds me of Bespin.
What's that?
Oh, it is.
In Empire Strikes Back. Because it looks like sunlight.
That is very nice light. Actually, look at that. The quality
it's
of it
very
is
very warm.
It's warm.
Yeah. And from their power source, yeah. So that's cool.
The whole film should have been shot like that.
Talking about the gold walls?
Yes. Especially since those robots weren't in the scene.
Look at that.
The whole film should have been
really
shot like
cool.
That.
Look at that.
I think his sweater's on inside out.
Oh, no.
Most likely.
Was that the tag?
No, it's because of the black hole driving him crazy.
Everything's reversed.
The black hole reverses all your clothes.
Going for a drive.
This is cool. The music for the funeral's cool. Cool. Yeah.
It's a funeral.
Ominous. Anytime you want ominous, John Barry was like,
a funeral for what?
One of those things with
droid
the
guys.
Face mask things.
Yeah. Which we didn't see. This is interesting.
He's referred to them so far only as some kind of drone, basically just offhanded. I created these things. They look medieval.
But I remember
romantic,
as a little kid, that
whatever,
was very creepy.
Oh, yeah.
They're actually humans
Just the whole principle of facelessness
right.
is creepy and then later finding out that they actually are people under there.
Here we are.
That's like
that's a bad backdrop in the dorm. So you can see where it cuts off with the lighting.
Oh right, yeah.
Once again, this is a science fiction film, and you know, instead of having straight up and down angles, you've got the this is like, remember in Empire, same thing where you had those angles.
Oh yeah, sure.
Same type of thing, and even when we're talking about in Logan's Run, what is it? You just can't have a regular door, like
the future.
Well, it looks
In the future, all door entrances will be at an angle.
Well, it's foreign, and it needs to be, you know, you need to suggest something that you're not used to, because it's the future, it's not this time, so just make things different, you know?
If this was my room, I'd be pissed sometimes.
But look, they've got
here.
normal frames.
Oh, this is all their clothing. See, this is where he discovers that they were actually crew members. Ew, from this...
I don't know if you jumpsuit.
Yeah, not so much. I think he's thinking this is the old crew's quarters. Before they abandoned
ship. He doesn't realize that they're still the same crew. Yeah.
Did you? I know you haven't seen this since 79. That's did okay. you pick up on that conversation earlier where he explained what supposedly happened to the crew?
Tell me quickly.
Basically, he said that a meteor shower disabled the ship. Everybody else, he told him to abandon ship and return home. Mm. And he and McCrae's father stayed on the ship.
Oh.
So supposedly they all jettisoned to... somewhat safety or something. I don't know.
But somehow never returned anywhere.
No, but all their stuff is still there.
Exactly.
Maximilian's on to him.
I don't know if I like Max.
You know what?
I mean, not as you know, like, oh, I don't like him. I just, as a device.
Yeah, he seems shifty to me, too.
That's what I was saying. No, not shifty. He's a character. I'm just saying as a device.
I know. I'm just kidding.
I mean, I guess. I don't know. He's part of the malevolence.
Lost in your chops. Yeah, he's an unspeaking, malevolent force, basically. He's sort of like Darth Vader, only more henchman-like.
I don't mind that. It's just this whole thing of they're being watched all the time. I mean, it was supposed to be on edge, and then it's doing its job. That's what I'm saying. I don't usually like movies like that, though. That's just me.
This set makes no sense.
Is this the terrarium?
It is. It's a waiting room. It's a sort of a... I don't know.
The waiting
passing
room?
Place in between the hallway and where it actually goes to.
Yeah, but what
is waiting room?
What's going on with these tubes down in the pit? Makes no sense.
That feeds into where the plants are to keep the atmosphere.
Yeah. That green door behind the temperature. Him, it's a giant terrarium. So all of that stuff
feeds into
apparently
this
is
the industrial
area.
Side that feeds into the.
So that's creepy. Room. See if they focused more on these guys with the masks.
Wow, what did I just hear go through my head?
They hear nothing. It's the computer.
Okay. I was thinking, John Barry, what are you up to?
That was bold.
That was an interesting choice.
How interesting and different.
Oh, must be the gardens.
Hey, it's silent.
You can see Bruce Dern out there.
It's silent running. Where's Huey, Dewey, and Louie?
You know, I don't think I've seen Silent Running.
Ah.
That's a good piece of 70s sci-fi.
Douglas Trumbull directed two films. That
notice
was his
he's
first
limping.
One. Oh, really? Mm. Okay, and that's important because...
Yep, because...
It clues them in later to the fact that they're not really robots.
Don't limp. And now he's disappeared.
I remember the publicity on this film touted the amount of mats, the amount of optical mat work in this film. It was huge. Disney was like... overwhelmed with the output that they had to do for this movie.
Well, they took it on. They were just like, we're doing it. So more power to them.
So I'm sorry, you were saying Doug Trumbull?
Directed two films.
Yes.
Silent Running with Bruce Dern.
Fantastic.
And then Brainstorm.
Ooh, and, also and I liked very much.
What was Silent Running about?
It's about the spaceship that has the last vegetation from Earth, and Bruce Dern is basically one of the, like, two or three crew members on it, and then they get basically a directive from Earth that they have to jettison everything and basically destroy the ship and come back to Earth, and Bruce Dern just quite can't do that.
Hmm.
And then it goes on from there.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
If you know anyone who likes science fiction and who's ecologically inclined and all green, that's the movie to see.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's even more timely now.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I can't think of anyone like that off the top of my head.
That's true. That is an interesting niche.
I never really
it?
Thought about putting those two things together, but now that I do,
well,
I don't know. I mean, I care about the environment just as much as the next guy.
If you care about your planet, watch Silent Running.
I'm also sort of enamored of the romance of the post-apocalyptic wasteland. So, I mean,
where do you
could
fall?
Go either way.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I was too specific.
I'll keep my eyes out, though.
And all you listeners out there, how many names pop into your head of people you know that would meet that description?
I can think a lot of people.
Okay.
But anyway, it was Drug Trumbull, who's more science fiction than director, but it was directed okay.
Okay.
So, it's fine. Wow, she's getting uncomfortable. Don't look at me, mister. Now, Yvette Mimieux, of course, I like Yvette Mimieux from the 70s because she was in films I really liked. Well, I liked her in them, but among them was... such classics as Skyjacked and The Neptune Factor.
Oh, here we go.
And what was the other one, Tim? What was she in? Oh, of course, she was in The Time Machine.
Well,
yeah, she was really young.
Good films. Time Machine was like one of her first ones. Diamond Head of Charlton Heston. She was in Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Oh, wow. So that was early 60s,
And then I remember her from her film that she produced for television, Hit Lady.
That's right, Hit Lady.
1974.
Wow. 1974. She was awesome in that.
Yeah.
You're going to have to see that.
Uh-huh. If there was an Yvette Mimieux fan club, I'd join it.
Would you know?
Well, if she was on Facebook, I'd like it and like fan it.
All right.
Sure.
So
every one of these robot or every one of these drones they've walked past has turned and watched them walk past.
Now, so in other words... what is this, Pong in Outer Space?
No, it's a shooting game.
This is a bad sequence. I don't like this
sequence. You don't like it? I love this sequence.
It makes no sense, though. I mean, that there's sort of a hierarchical...
Those are all drones, so they all used to be human? All of them?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
No. These guys are actual robots, right?
Oh,
the ones
okay.
with the rounded,
with the
reflective masks are humans.
Right, these guys are just robots.
Slaves.
But we've seen
these
that their robot technology.
Sure?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Because they keep turning and watching and behaving in somewhat human fashion.
Well, and look at these two guys, robots talking to each other.
Right.
This is Disney personifying robots right and left.
Now that's the whole point. Is like their robot technology. They have personalities, you know,
which is
and
from...
as close as a robot can, they feel. But they don't really get into the whole like discussion of that in this because it's a Disney film and they want the robots to. You know, be human enough for people or kids or whatever to relate to. I think watching the whole like shooting scene, which is coming up where Vincent competes with this special troops guy. I like that. Maybe just cause I remember it from then and just thinking, you know, it's the little guy who seems like he's just this cute little thing. Like he actually like, you know, outshoots this, you know, supposedly
to me, it's
special
all,
troops robot.
It's weak comic relief stuff, you know. Mm.
Now, how does
I could
he
do
that?
It.
How does he do it if he had his lasers deactivated or damaged?
I'm sorry, say that again?
How does he compete if he had his lasers...
Who's he?
The
yeah,
robot.
Vincent?
How does, okay, how does Vincent compete when...
I thought that they fixed him between then and now. But
I haven't really seen...
where they did, or maybe he has a self-repair kind of thing. Maybe they got past that and he wasn't really actually damaged. Maybe it didn't really damage the lasers. I'm not sure.
This scene right here could be lifted directly from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Absolutely.
Dining with the captain.
Oh, yeah.
And in 20,000 Leagues, he talks about the sea vegetation, how the dinner's made out of everything from the ocean.
Right.
And that same scene's pretty much this one right here. But I will say, I want the painting on the wall of the Cygnus. I don't know if they'll show it again.
Right.
There's a really cool oil painting or something of the Cygnus.
I bet you could get a reproduction somewhere, right?
I doubt it. That'd be fun, though.
Yeah, so basically you would change the outside view of the window to underwater and you'd have it.
Basically,
it's too close to be comfortable.
And, you'd have Kirk Douglas and Peter Lorre and
James Mason.
And James Mason. And who was the other guy with them?
Brain has gone dead.
Yes. Yes, Tim?
Did anyone? Boy, it's not there.
It took you. Jim will talk and it'll come to you. Yes, Jim?
Did anyone catch that he made the reference to them being the only Earth people who knew of his existence in sort of an ominous fashion?
I always take that. Yeah, well, listen, you've got bad guys like Max around. Everything's ominous at this point.
Right, but you're the only people who know that I exist.
So clearly you're not going to get out of here.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, okay, that's an interesting thing. Going back to what I said, the malevolent feeling is sort of like if you walk into that malevolence and it's always there, you have a good idea you might not walk out, which is what makes it a kind of scary thing for a Disney film.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, though you do have stakes there because you never know when something bad is going to happen. Does it come to you, Tim?
No. Okay. I wanted to say Robert Donat, but I don't know if it's
that. No, it's not Robert Donat.
It's some guy who is having problems remembering his lines at that point of his career.
Oh, really?
That? Yeah.
Oh. And I can't even picture him.
I can. The voice, it's going to drive me crazy.
All right, I'll go to the intertubes.
Thanks.
While you all comment on their shooting skills.
This whole comic relief thing right here just falls flat for me. It's Disney. It's like Freaky Friday.
Is this integral to the
you know
story?
What,
is it integral to the story?
It kind of is because it actually shows that the little tiny floaty robot guys, while they seem cute and whatever, actually shoot better than these guys. And in the end sequence when they're escaping, that makes a huge difference because the little dudes are basically the firepower that keeps the, you know...
To me, it's Disney capitalizing on robots. It's like, you know, dinosaurs. Kids are going to love it. Let's throw in more dinosaurs. Right. Well, robots. Kids are going to love this.
Maybe, but I like it.
It's fine, but what I'm saying is that scene actually did serve a purpose. You're right. It does plant the idea that they can actually compete with them.
Right, because see here, Vincent goes up and actually challenges this dude, you know, and because the older one is too afraid to actually shoot as well as he can actually shoot. Oh, there he goes. He's getting his lasers charged right there.
Okay, so the director of 20,000 Leagues is Richard Fleischer.
Oh, that's right, Richard Fleischer. What was I thinking?
I don't know what you were thinking. Richard Fleischer did.
I love Richard Fleischer's stuff.
Who did Fantastic Voyage, and he also did Silent Running. No,
and
Silent
Soylent
Running,
Green.
Soylent Green later. Paul Lucas.
Paul Lucas, that's right.
Ugh. Played Professor Aronnax.
Thank you. That was driving
Professor
me crazy.
Professor Pierre Aronnax.
I'd love to have that view outside my window.
No, I'd hate that.
I'd dig it.
You'd hate it?
Yes, I'm being sarcastic.
I think I'd like it for a few days, but after a while, it'd drive me crazy.
Well, just because it's a black hole.
Well,
and that's what they do.
Yep.
They drive you crazy?
Black holes drive you nuts.
So is the black hole driving him crazy? Is that what it is?
Yeah, what's the explanation for his...
He may just be crazy.
Okay, so in Event Horizon, are they crazy? Or do they get driven crazy by the black hole?
They're driven crazy by supernatural forces that live in the black hole.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Event Horizon was very disturbing. I saw that in the theater. It went so dark, and by the time he's like holding his own eyeballs or something,
Liberate tutte me exiferis.
It's very, almost demonic feeling.
All right, this shooting sequence has now gone on for 5 minutes too long.
I told you. It's so funny.
I'm laughing so hard right now. But I guess for a 7-year-old this was fun.
Yeah, we got to really put into context.
Was this?
It was a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah.
On top of which, the guns that the robot stormtrooper dudes are using are really cool looking. You know, again, it's the little guy. Like, I think that, looking at it as an adult, Disney definitely was capitalizing on the whole, like, cute robot thing appealing to kids, but it worked.
C-3PO,
I remember it. It stuck in my mind, and I always liked this movie.
You know, this reminds me, strangely enough, of Casino Royale.
Oh, my Lord. Do you explain?
Oh, please elaborate.
Let me explain. In the sense that Casino Royale was a transitional film between old Bond and new Bond. So in other words, they had the big set pieces like the old Bond stuff, but then they had the character stuff that they were moving towards. And in watching it one of the last times, I could feel the tension between them. It's sort of like, oh, here's a big, you know, set piece, and then you have the other part of the more, you know, tougher, younger, trying to find his way Bond type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, you see that tension here too between the adult. This is the adult film, so to speak. Where they're having the adult thing, and then they have the kid thing. and it's sort of like the seams really kind of show themselves.
Mm, yeah, I can see that.
It reminded me of the miracle worker.
The miracle.
It reminded me of Barry Lyndon. Or was it War and Peace? Hmm.
So hard to choose.
You know, this is kind of is like Cars.
Yeah, well, he sounds pretty much just like Mater.
And that came later.
Here come some more wires.
But this is cool.
Oh.
That's a good shot. That was ambitious for 1979.
Yeah.
That is.
No, I really do like the effects and the technology and everything in this is really cool. It's really compelling. It's just those moments where it feels like you're watching a cartoon mm-hmm. that take you out of it a bit, you know?
Well, but that take you out as an adult.
As an adult. But as a young kid watching it, it doesn't take you out at all. It actually helps you connect better. Because you zone through a lot of this stuff.
Oh, as a kid, you'd be like,
as a kid,
it's adults talking about some.
Right. And they're talking a lot. Ooh, pretty black hole. Look at that.
Right. Something for everyone. And you know, always trying to please both demographics.
But you know what? This is actually just in terms of anything. This is this has been a really long sequence. I mean,
a lot of exposition.
A lot of exposition. And it's like, well, couldn't they go into another set, make it more interesting, move the camera? But it's all kind of stationary. There's no walk and talks. But of course, this is before the day of walk and talks. And, you know,
yep.
It's all, we're here and we're
It's pretty
here.
Static.
I mean, they
pull, it has the,
they pull this set out of, you know, it's like, it's storage. Okay, let's get the old, you know, vintage.
It's been used in early 20s tons of Disney stuff.
Exactly.
Including 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Exactly. And put the blue screen or the green screen behind there. And
yeah, for me, this scene is the, you know, the Washington, D.C. with the cats from Logan's Run for me.
Yeah, exactly, right?
So.
That was more interesting. This is like in Temple of Doom, that whole exposition thing when they tried to gross us out with the monkey brains and all that kind of thing.
Oh, right.
That was worse, but that's the whole thing. We're all talking and trying to explain what's going on and blah, 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 and blah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a more creative way that they could have done this. Or a more interesting place, as you said, you know, they've stayed too long in this set.
I mean,
too long at the fair.
They had exposition that they had to get out. I understand that. But,
right.
Well, I mean, look, once again, it's 79, Disney's doing this.
It feels, and, you know, first, second draft, and it's just rushed, and that's what you get. Mm-hmm.
Now this is interesting. This is captivating.
Mm-hmm. Creepy. Captivating.
It's very creepy. Well, it's interesting, except for these guys. Freaking frack.
They broke the mood.
They do break the mood. Seriously, I like this whole thing with these drones.
Now, what we just got revealed in the previous scene and this scene is that basically the guys with the mirror faces are actually human. And what's left of the crew.
Yeah, see, they're robots.
Yeah, those are robots.
Anyway, plot-wise, this would be the first time where things are turning now.
So this is where we find out?
Just a mysterious place with a weird, eccentric guy that's going to do this crazy mission to a psychopath who actually has enslaved the entire crew and made them mindless drones. And, you know, they might actually be in danger no matter what happens.
Yeah, because he's going to turn them into drones. Isn't that the plan?
Well, that's what could happen.
He's going to turn Yvette into one.
He better not.
Because he throws her down on that rotating thing just saw.
If he does.
There's a whole big rescue sequence.
He's going to have me to answer to. No one touches Yvette.
That console reminds me of the prison level on the Death Star.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. We're okay.
We just had a slight weapons malfunction, but everything's okay here now. Okay.
How are you?
Fine. How are you? We're sending a squad up. Negative.
Oh, that always got a huge laugh. Anytime I saw that in the theater, the how are you?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. No radiation leak here. Nuclear. Who is this? What's your badge number?
Never good at conversation anyway. Yes.
Well, that was a progenitor of all this stuff.
Yes.
In a way. That started the whole sci-fi craze.
Oh, that's
it started
creepy.
Star Trek the Motion Picture, started this.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, huh?
Even, I'd say...
We wouldn't have gotten a lot of the stuff
Alien, even Alien probably was thanks to... in probably a little part to Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean,
the fact that space made it interesting.
It awoke the genre in a new way. Like, it made it obvious how it was more marketable.
Yeah.
That wasn't a good hairdo on Yvette for their optical work.
No, it wasn't.
From far away, the fringing.
Oh, yeah?
Bad.
You saw the line?
Just a fringe around her perm. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, because most of this stuff so far.
That's pretty scary. That low angle mess.
Yeah, right. Comes in starting to quote Genesis.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. When your seemingly malevolent host starts quoting Genesis,
appears out of nowhere and starts quoting the creation.
And has
story.
A snoot light on his. Sorry,
a nice low angle shot with a ceiling behind him. Yeah, you know you're in trouble. There's that ESP thing again. Why'd they throw that in there? Does it pay off anywhere else?
Yeah.
She uses it.
It does
because
basically Vincent can tell her everything he just found out without talking to her or without meeting with her anywhere.
Maybe she's got a cybernetic chip stuck in her head and he can communicate with her that way.
It's possible. They don't go into it. I feel like that, similar to some of the stuff we've discussed in the last movie, is not explained enough. I feel like they could have done a little bit more. Because, like, first of all, ESP is, as far as anybody knows, an organic thing, perhaps a supernatural thing, and to communicate with a robot, that's weird. It's right. Different.
They just talked about the Einstein-Rosen bridge, which is essentially a wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
This is poor direction. Yvette's just been standing there.
True.
Poor actress.
Yeah.
What do I do?
The camera doesn't move. Look, the camera is static. It, yeah. You know, it's all... When I say it's old school, it's like not good old school, because old school would move still the camera.
Well, of course, you're talking about an effects. I mean, this is an effects shot.
Yes.
You've got
How much can you do? And they couldn't move it back then. Yes, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I'm so used to now. It's like, oh yeah, who cares? You know, you just
Although
move the camera.
With Aces, that was what was changing that.
Well, but they could only do so many Aces.
That was their miniature stuff. But yeah, for principal photography, it was different.
So the interesting thing here is now he's talking about the Einstein-Rosen bridge and actually going through the black hole, and that there is something actually there, something extra. Physical, if
right.
you want,
and he's suggesting that maybe eternal life is on the other side.
Well, yeah, and now it gets more. I don't want to say theological. Well, I guess that is theological, right? If you're talking about eternal life.
Well, this film definitely gets spiritual at the end. There's no mistaking it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
There's
no doubt,
subtle whatsoever.
No discussion. Here you go.
It's as subtle as Slim Pickens's robot character.
Yeah.
And I remember in the theater, and the hype leading up to this was, what's in the black hole? I mean, the whole thing was, oh, you're going to get blown out of your chair
when you see what
they came up with.
Yeah, what was inside the ship?
So we were all just anticipating the ending of this movie.
Yeah, don't describe it to Serge. I want to see his reaction.
Oh, no, I remember.
You do?
Yeah, I saw the movie.
Darn. I was hoping you didn't remember that part.
Dude, I remember enough.
Was it imprinted on your mind because of the stark disappointment?
No, it was just like, oh, okay. Once again, I was 18 years old. What the hell was I going to think?
Hey, Ernest Borgnine's turning crazy.
Uh-oh.
Oh,
see that look in his eye?
Is that that's the black hole thing. See? It's working.
Besides the reveal of the Cygnus at the beginning, which John Barry's surge of orchestra, my second favorite composition and shot is when they go into the black hole, actually. And I'll talk about it when they actually do it. They're very, very cool.
I'm gonna be very interested in seeing how they redo this.
Okay, now here Vincent is talking to her and telling her what's going on and telling her to report back to the ship. This is where things turn ugly.
Yep. Poor Tony Perkins.
I know. He was actually going along with the dude.
Yep.
This set and the way it's... Am I too loud there?
What?
This guy jumped back
six feet.
Is there
a gnat?
We've
been in here.
This set and the way it's shot...
Oh, that's a nice shot.
...would look really good on Blu-ray if they did a good transfer.
Oh, for sure.
This stuff would look the best out of the film, probably.
Is he talking to himself, Maximilian?
And I like the shallow depth of field, so the background just gets smoothed out and blurred with the stained glass effect there.
So basically, Alex is going to stay with him to go into the black hole.
Yep.
And they're taking off.
Yep.
He's a scientist to the end.
Yep.
And a dreamer.
That's what he does. Yeah.
Right. See, now this, is getting interesting. Now it's getting actually, strangely enough, interesting. They've been laying a few things down, and now I'm kind of able to look past the, maybe, the two robots.
ESP moment.
Oh, there's the ESP. Oh, now, they had to zoom in.
Again,
oh, no.
he's telling her why it's dangerous now. He just told her to report back to the ship.
But that's
first.
A nice push. That's a great push in.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That was very, because we hardly have any camera movement in this thing.
Shift. And the background is so fantastic. I mean, that's
great acting. The space shot.
Well, she finally had a chance to act.
And now she's looking at the guys in the black outfits, knowing that they're the
right
crew.
Booming.
That's some cool effects.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Frankenstein sounds.
Definitely.
Well, I think the idea of the mad, it's the mad scientist trope again.
Yeah, there's a lot of cliches going on.
Yeah. And the John Barry music definitely supports that. I mean, the John Barry music is good, but it supports that whole thing.
I missed it. What was that book that he's carrying again?
The Book like of Formulas.
Oh, okay. Dun dun dun.
Now it gets interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, I kind of like her.
He's being creepy with her.
I want to experiment on her head.
He really is.
Here you go.
Yep.
Oh, is this where he
takes... like, scary moment.
Well, that's a nice rim light on him. That's actually a really nice shot. And mm-hmm. I like that the set is built so you can see all the way up.
That was creepy. The breathing sound?
Is creepy. If I was 7, I'd be freaking out.
But not as much as at the next thing that happens.
The jig's up.
Yeah.
Nice boom shot. I mean, crane shot.
Oh, yes.
Now that's a twisted view of things. They'd all be dead. It's the only way to keep them alive.
Right.
Yeah.
It's his rationalization.
Except because I'd have to kill them otherwise.
So he's the mad scientist.
He's coming unhinged.
He's been unhinged. You know, he's the...
Well, too, also they're suggesting that Maximilian also kind of calls more of the shots than we know.
Oh, really?
Because right now he's doing something on his own volition.
Ooh.
That sound? Yeah, that's pretty intense. You never saw that in a Disney film.
Nope.
Wow.
7, 8-year-old? Freak out, dude.
Yep. And they should have had blood on that, but they didn't.
Oh, that's interesting. Right. Okay, so basically Max is acting independent. So
now that's smooth. I like the way he glides.
So is Max crazy?
Maximilian isn't crazy, but he's got his own agenda.
I think he was programmed this way.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a definite comparison at the end that Reinhardt and Maximilian are one and the same, or that Maximilian enslaves Reinhardt.
Right, to stay alive, kind of, or who knows?
It's very symbolic. I think that they're just one and the same, the way they visualize it at the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
It's like
he's a prisoner.
The human
inside
Reinhardt
the robot.
Is the mind, and the Maximilian it's robot is the physical strength and the
of the robot.
See, she's just communicated it.
That's why they have to rescue her. Yep. We have the really incongruous John Barry cue that will come up shortly. That's interesting. Look at that.
That's a nice shot. I mean, it's a great set. Really, it is.
That's a painting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
they merged the set with the painting, and that was an interesting perspective.
Yeah, see, they're just they've just gotten the mat a little bit better. Yeah. I mean, it has to do with the registration too. I mean, it's a lot of work, but with great for effort for 79, though Star Wars did it better.
I remember the glow of the star field against the Cygnus. It was really cool in the theater. It was awesome texturing light wise. I like this music cue. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Again, though, very Bondy.
Yep. It does have that feel. It's effective, though, for what's going on.
Right here. Dun, good dun, melody. Dun. Melody comes through right here.
Time Machine was 62?
60.
60. Wow. That's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I wonder Rod Taylor's first feature role.
And that was
first leading man role.
And that was her first role, right?
I don't know what she did before that.
I think it was. Or it was one of her biggest early roles. I mean, it was one of her big breaks.
You know what I keep thinking?
And I think she was 18 at the time.
I kind of wonder how many super skinny actors they had to get to play these guard things.
That's true.
I mean, to fit inside that stuff.
They probably didn't breathe right.
No.
Those costumes.
And they had to be able to move the right way. I mean, it's almost mime-like.
But they worked a lot.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah. Go Cartman.
Ooh.
Now, this is... I remember this.
That's a cool shot. Looking down the opticals shaft.
Cool, rotoscoping the exhaust and then through the... That's really interesting.
Do you like the model, Jim?
The model's nice. Yeah, from certain angles, it's particularly nice. But the other model, I don't care for.
Oh, no,
this one doesn't bother me. Yeah. I would like to get a really good look at it, but it's an incredible grid work.
So he is going to try and turn her into a drone, and they're starting.
Now here's the music cue. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Okay, it's a victorious moment, it's a heroic moment. But listen, they repeat it. It's like it was not scored to picture.
No.
It's like someone lifted this and put it over twice in the scene.
Yeah. And that's something I noticed when I rewatched it recently. I'm like, this keeps looping.
Yeah, it's tacky.
Heck? Yeah, it is. It really is.
Sounds like library music.
And it's the wrong music for this.
Mm-hmm.
You should
be scared.
It's cheesy.
This is they've already triumphed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what this reminds me of is the corny parts in the movie Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
Which I love that movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
Meant to be corny. It's supposed to be campy. That's the whole humor of the thing. But this is what you would hear in that.
So it ends, and now they looped it.
Yeah.
And it happens again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
And
tinfoil hat.
I love the tinfoil on her head.
So no one will be able to scan her brain.
That's right. And
it'll cook properly.
From Signs. Remember Signs, where they used aluminum foil so that they couldn't read their thoughts?
It'll keep the CIA. What?
Yeah. The Mel Gibson...
really? Is that what they did?
Joaquin Phoenix?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that part.
There's a lot of comic relief at the end with Tin Foil, what that was all about.
I don't remember that.
In what was it again?
Signs. Where the aliens are coming down and something.
Yeah. Wasn't Joaquin Phoenix wearing the...
With the little girl, his sister.
Yeah.
Oh, so the humanoid robots are now helping.
No, that's them in costume.
Oh, it's them in costume. Mm-hmm. Oh, you see, there you go. And of course, all you saw there was coding, like basic, before it went out the focus.
See what he just said? The disguises aren't going to work. He said fire on any humanoids between medical and the Palomino.
That's ambitious. They were zoomed in, they zoom out to reveal more, then they had an optical effect over that with the lasers.
I don't like the laser effects. I really don't.
Yeah. A cool effect is the meteorite coming through the ceiling. Duncan, you know the shot I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
The meteorite
storm?
That's
actually pretty cool.
It is cool. Here's that music again.
There's that bad music cue. Wow, that is really bad.
It's inappropriate.
Especially with the lasers, like it's like a B film from the 1960s or something.
It's the victory...
Yeah.
Thing.
It was like Disney's cheap attempt at a Star Wars opera feel.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense in the scene. This should be a suspense.
Tense. Exactly.
You know, I mean, this should be something
this
going
on. This is a lesson
in
music working against the picture.
Yep. Oh,
yep.
Seriously.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, there's no suspense in it.
No. But you're right. It totally should be suspense, because what happens is extremely suspenseful. Because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen to them right up to the end. But the you almost feel like you're watching, like,
that was a bad
synchronized
shot.
Swimming. Or
I
like,
check out emotionally, you know? Because I'm yeah. not. There's nothing at risk.
Yeah.
Right. I think they should have done it without music.
That would have been better than using this music.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
And just lots of special effects. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure John Barry is pretty pissed.
Do you think that they left him out of the loop?
He would have, of all people, I feel he was pressured to do this, and maybe on one sequence they just used the cue that he came up with, and they decided to put it in there. The scene where he rescues Yvette.
Yeah.
Because John Barry, if anyone knew mood and pace of a film, of a scene, to do it musically, it was him.
Clearly. I wonder
his
if it
motto
was
always less is more. That was John Barry's motto.
I wonder
writing.
If it was a budget thing where, like, they just figured, oh, we'll just loop this thing because it's just the end or whatever, and we don't want to bring in for more orchestra
sessions.
I think
it was a post. Yeah, something in post. They just did.
Yeah. Well, they would have had a spotting session, and then afterwards it would have been like, okay, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. All right, let's take the music editors and just do this. But he would have approved everything. That's the whole thing. That's the weird thing.
Who knows? Yeah. Paycheck's a paycheck.
Oh, they've put,
at this point.
He said, we can't endanger the Cygnus by exploding them too soon. So apparently there are bombs
on their
on
ship.
The Palomino.
Well, of course he wasn't going to let
them
get away.
That's a good shot.
I mean,
yeah.
That is a good shot.
What were they thinking? He let them get away?
Exactly.
You know, it's like Darth Vader. He ain't getting off of Cloud City.
Mm-hmm. That was a neat choice that they made right there, actually. Yeah, the door only came down halfway, so it provided some cover.
But that's unprecedented. The doors always went up. So it's a little weird that they had the
door.
Oh,
yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah.
Logic schmogic.
I mean, in the midst of, like, this end sequence that has a lot of things that are kind of like, eh, you know, that's like, oh, that's an interesting little thing they did.
Now, there's your suspense music.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, right.
It's a little bit too subdued. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like you're sneaking somewhere. This music feels like they're sneaking somewhere. And really,
you know, maybe what he did at some point is he just provided some cues and said, you know what, you just put them wherever you want.
Yeah, maybe he got busy with something else and just wasn't available.
I don't know.
Said,
well, usually, whatever. I mean, honestly, in a composer agreement contract, usually it depends on who the composer is. And usually the production will reserve the right to use the music and to cut it and to move it around and rearrange it as they see fit. Mm. Now, with some composers, depending on what their contract is, it may be a little different. They might have to get them to do it. I don't know. Maybe I have no idea. But chances are maybe he did this, and then he kind of moved on and said, fine, just let me double check it. I don't know. Mm.
So, trivia.
Yes.
Besides Moonraker, which took place in outer space.
Ugh, yes.
Name another John Barry outer space film that he did the music score for.
You Only Live Twice?
Well, doesn't count either.
Oh, Ernest.
Outland?
But something along the lines of Black Hole, Space Opera.
What did Ernest
do? Big.
He's crossed the line to crazy. Now he faked an injury so he could get back on the ship and take off without them.
Oh. Yeah. So it is the Black Hole. It is the Black Hole who's driving them crazy.
Yep. So
the answer?
Reveal, yes. Yes.
Star Crash.
What?
Which I think
was
a Roger Corman
Star
film.
Crash.
Star Crash.
I've never
John Barry did that.
I've never even
with,
heard of
that. Caroline Monroe, was that her name?
Yeah. I've never heard of that.
That's awesome, though, that he did a...
Star Crash. So, he's had his share of space schlock.
So basically, he's going to steal the ship and try and get away because he's gotten crazy from the black hole like they do in Event Horizon, and he's going to blow up.
Well, loosely like they do in Event Horizon.
It's that whole crazy thing with black holes, which I don't understand.
Right.
Yes.
Just...
But...
I don't know if you have noticed on some of these monitors, that are the CRTs that are down in the panels, they have mirrored sides, which is a really bad choice because you're seeing a reflected information. It's just bizarre.
Hmm. Huh. That's a good effect.
I'll look next time. Yeah, that's pretty good right there.
I liked it because it definitely gives you a sense of scale. Okay, that's not good.
The animation was poor.
The animation was bad.
It also looks like it strobed.
Looks like it was too fast or something.
See, it's strobing. It's just weird.
You see?
Oh, that's cool.
That's not good.
Bad shot, though. I mean, bad shooting by the gunner.
Uh-oh. So now it's blown up against the
optical.
Ship.
Oops.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, huh?
That's not going to be good.
And just like Logan's run when the city goes up, now the Cygnus goes up.
Mm-hmm. Dr. No's Island starts exploding. You know,
that's
you pop one computer and that's the whole thing. The rest of everything starts exploding. Okay, did a robot just say you can't unscramble eggs?
Yeah, he's been on with the pithy sayings the whole time, Serge. You missed
it.
He's got a catalog of pithy sayings.
Oh, yes. He certainly does. He's got some tunes.
That's right.
Oh, let's go to the probe ship. Now, the probe ship that they know nothing about, by the way.
Okay. Here's our meteorite storm that happens for no reason. But we have to spice things up and have a space meteorite storm.
Jim, what are you
doing? It's karma because he said there was a meteorite storm that destroyed the crew.
Oh, right.
Oh, and that's why it's striking.
But there wasn't because he killed the crew.
The meteorite storm, here's some obstacles over there.
I got that part.
No, I think that's practical. Anyway, this has some good stuff and some really horrendous work in it, this meteorite storm.
Mm, yeah.
It's a couple of good things and a couple of things kind to go. That's really bad. Now, here's our...
Oh, this is
amusement park ride.
Yes,
totally. And I'll bet you anything that might have motivated Space Mountain.
No, Space Mountain was open already.
Was it?
I think it opened like a year or two before.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Well, I'm not surprised that they have it, given that Space Mountain exists one way or the other.
Wait a second. Did they just come to a giant open area that had been destroyed by the meteors? Because that would mean there was a vacuum there.
And remember
that?
Shot.
That's this very is the classic
earlier.
Shot.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Wow. Okay.
Look at this work.
Almost Indiana
foreground
Jones-esque.
To background. This is awesome right there.
Oh, wow.
That's Mary Poppins' chimney.
Of course they have to fall.
Of course they do.
Silhouette
I hate that.
Stuff.
And again, complete and total vacuum.
This is where George Lucas got the idea for the rolling boulder. For Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You know this? Or you
Come
just...
on, it's obvious. It's completely obvious. He saw this and he said, I'm going to steal that.
The first time when they actually go the physical like vacuum route is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hit or miss. And later there's a really, really obvious one. But I'm going to make some stuff up to make, you know, to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if it flies.
Do you still get the warm fuzzies when you watch this film, Duncan?
There are certain parts where I recall them, seeing them as a child, but
okay,
not generally. That's why I haven't watched this all the time like Star Wars.
But you still like watching
it. Wait a second. He's got the ability to have a continuous laser flow?
Apparently.
He should have been using that the whole time.
Right.
See, that this is just wrong. All the food's going.
And it got super cold.
And... Yes, don't fly away, Kate.
Right in the face.
Yeah, the physics of this is not exactly correct. Mm-hmm. But okay, that's all right. We'll go with it, I guess.
Yes.
At this point.
Just hold on to the tree. It'll keep you from going out.
That's right.
It's a shrub, actually. It wasn't a tree.
Shrubbery.
And where's the vet? Where'd she go?
She went with Vincent.
Yeah.
He flew her to safety, apparently.
Yes, indeed. There they are. Do-do-do-do-do. The music in this part actually fits.
Yeah, it does. And you see, this would have been good during the... Well, I don't know about during the gunfight.
I'm sure they loved filming this.
I don't even know what the crap is that.
What is that crap exactly?
Soap flakes, maybe?
I don't even know.
Well, clearly they've got makeup going on and they've got stuff flying. Neither could have been fun.
Yeah, so all these years you've been out there and never once you had a meteor shower that destroyed his ship, but okay. All right.
That's why I say karma.
Because it's really taking everything out.
Meteors sent from the depths of hell itself.
Well, maybe that's what it is.
I'm just sad that the Cygnus model has to get beaten up.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you do make a large model for a movie, blowing it up is the next best thing to just looking at it a whole lot.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. There's always a certain fun to that. Let's make something that looks really awesome and blow it up.
So she's got to tell us this? But okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
She's got to tell us the storm is over.
I wasn't sure until she said it.
Well, yes, I didn't know.
This is sad. Here we go, the big monitor. This is a lesson, guys.
Yes, what's that?
You can get a monitor that's too big.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, because it falls on him?
Yes, it kills him.
See, that's what happens.
To me, I want a monitor that, you know, it's so huge, but this is a lesson to me that it might kill me.
Life lesson, never buy a monitor that's so big it could crush you if it fell.
Oh, that's harsh. That was bad.
That hurts.
Yeah, this is some serious violence for a Disney film. It is. Like, well, altogether, starting from the evisceration.
Look at the pretty colors.
I guess.
That's a cool effects shot from that angle, anyway.
So, where are they going? How are they going to get out of there?
They're going to the
survival ship.
Yeah, you know the probe that we saw earlier that came back that's already been inside the black hole.
But they know nothing of.
Right.
But, you know, at least how to fly it.
But it's like the ship in Independence Day.
Well, they don't know how big it is.
Anyone can figure it out. Oh, now that's
they just know it exists.
That's a really cool shot.
And that could fly away from the black hole.
All this red just does not translate to standard definition digital transfer.
No, it doesn't. Maybe Blu-ray, but not red ray. But it's already
red
been,
ray.
It's already been
row. Red ray.
It's been prepared, buddy. Wow, he's pretty sad.
Uh-oh.
Monitor.
Well, that's what happens, buddy. This is what happens when you enslave human beings. Oh, and Max doesn't care?
Nope, he's just like, I'm out of
here. Cold.
Yep.
That's why I say Maximilian has his own agenda. It's sort of like, it's almost like there's a silent power struggle between them, even from when they first came onto the ship.
Right.
This is Max's chance, and he knows it. Time to take over. No one's going to help him.
Right.
And then what's this quote? He's the last thing he says is something about it'll happen. I think they come back to him. His dying words are very profound. Someone said it. I think like Einstein or someone when he died. Who was it? It's
I don't know what he says.
Something about the light.
Uh-oh.
Ooh, Max has lasers.
It's very Bond. You know, this is where the John Barry music, I know he's good. It just kind of not working. Now, you see the thing with Tony Perkins was a setup for this. That you know if he gets the blades going, you know it's not going to be good.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, did the robot just sacrifice himself?
Apparently the whole structure is actually made of foam rubber.
Yeah, it's rubberized.
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was
for your safety.
I thought it was the inside of the Hindenburg.
Dirigible, yeah.
Ooh, there's a good word. I need to use that in a sentence.
Dirigible?
This week. Dirigible.
Dirigible. Yes. Incorrigible? Incorrigible?
This music cue actually works right here. Ominous chasing you.
Where are they? I don't even know where they are.
They're in some kind of passageway thingy going somewhere.
Thank you, Duncan.
You're welcome. I hope that cleared it up for everyone who's watching.
Yeah.
That was great.
Because the geography right now is confusing me just a little bit.
You need to know.
He's so lost without this commentary. I'd be so lost.
So hang on. This is really important. So, is he killing the kid friendly robot?
He's trying.
He's zapping him good.
Wait, I think you got it backwards.
No, he's zapping. He's about to get him.
Okay, now
he's paying him back for Tony Perkins.
Now check this out. The robot screams.
Oh,
also creepy. Creepy as all get out.
See, now this is a good payoff for the little spunky robot. Now I like him.
Yeah.
After all this time. Oh, well, wow. That is freaky.
Right? The little... Ooh. Now, but Vincent's had a sort of quiet, like, you know, I'm a badass kind of thing going on the whole film. If he didn't have the goofy eyes...
Were they outside?
Yeah,
right here, it's like
they're outside, too.
Okay, excuse me?
That makes no sense.
Okay. Pressure of space, dust, and particles and gases close to the black hole is very similar to an atmosphere. So, they can breathe and not get crushed or frozen.
And the anti-grav field. Okay, I think it's the anti-grav field that helps.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Helps beat them that.
Now, listen.
What you got now?
You know what? Makes no sense.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
And no.
Maximilian Schell still has a line, I think, when they're about to go into the black hole. Oh. I don't think he's dead yet.
Yet?
Right here. Okay. All light.
Oh.
See that? That, someone very famous, a genius like Einstein or someone that actually lived, those were his last words before he died. And the writers actually made a point. Yeah, you can look it up on the internet. I forget who it was, but you're like, why is he saying all light?
Hmm. Well, we can look it up.
Wait. We're missing Bob's death scene. He's going to die.
I don't want to miss that. It's my favorite part.
He's gonna die. A death scene was what was missing, like in the first prequel for Jar Jar. Then that would have made the end so much better.
Vincent said,
"Dude, you didn't just say that, did you?"
Vincent said.
And he's going forward, but he's looking back. I'll never forget you, Bob.
It's the John Barry Out of Africa strings.
I'll never forget you. I just noticed that the Cygnus has a spare tire holder on the bottom.
No.
It's a little string thingy with a big wingnut looking thing on the end. Oh, there goes Charlie.
He's going into outer space.
Yep. He's going right into the black hole. Look at him go.
Oh, there he goes. There he goes.
No, these wires.
Maybe Vincent can get him.
I lost control and I can't right myself.
Wait, isn't there a vacuum?
We discussed this already.
Yes.
Mixture of space gases, pressure near the black hole, simulates atmosphere and gravity.
Didn't we discuss our opinion of that theory?
No.
You
no,
didn't, but I'd
no,
like to hear.
This
no,
is where no. the Disney of the whole thing just,
ruins it?
Comes to the fore.
Oh, look, there's gravity.
Yeah, gravity's working really well there.
Yeah, think?
Yeah. I tried to find the All Light quote. I can't find it.
It's there. I think it's on IMDb somewhere.
If you weren't paying attention, that tower breaking off would look like a rocket taking off from the thing.
Was that what it was supposed to be?
No, it was the tower on the thing breaking.
Oh, there
they go. Now they're taking off.
So
in
now
the
they're taking
ship.
Off in the smaller probe ship, which they, now here's the good thing they planted. It's gone into the black hole and come back out. So they know that structurally it can survive.
Right. But it's only traveled around the edge of it though. They don't know if it's never
gone in. It's only gone to the event horizon.
And the anticipation in the theater at this point, everyone was on pins and needles for what the whole publicity beforehand was.
Yeah.
That we go the black hole. Everyone's like, there we go, finally, 2 hours or whatever.
Like,
now we
got it. What's in there?
Well, the thing is they're trying to get away, and obviously what happens is they wind up not being able to get
away. Escape it.
Yeah, well, first we get to see the ship get crushed in the black hole. And there we go.
Lots of stars going in there.
It's looking... Well, I think we're seeing through.
Particles and meteors and whatnot, maybe?
I don't know.
Nah, I don't like that effect. I don't like the stars going into an effect. That just doesn't...
No? Don't like that?
No,
but
I don't
like
that.
Like them being able to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. No problem. But the stars going... I don't believe that.
Yeah. That wouldn't happen in real life.
Oh,
that wouldn't happen in real life.
You see? The ship's been programmed to Reinhardt's course.
Yep.
Yeah, buddy.
They can't not go in.
He's like, yep.
Okay, so we're about to have a Star Trek IV going back in time, like,
what?
Weird,
the strobing,
ethereal,
echoey
thoughts happening kind of thing.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
They're on a gyroscope.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that must have been sickening.
Oh, yeah.
There's no up, there's no down, there's no past, there's no present.
Thank you.
There is no you.
There's no logic.
Only that.
Okay, first of all, they would have gotten crushed.
Wow.
And died.
Maybe.
You don't know. Have you been through a black hole?
Mm.
And for a Disney film, they start screaming.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, the dude does.
They start screaming. I'm thinking Disney got really dark in that sequence.
Right. That's a nice lighting on her.
Yeah.
Actually, this is good lighting on all of them. Finally.
See, he screams. Yvette doesn't scream, but he screams.
It's because he's a girly
and
man.
Yeah, what's
I
going
think
on
the
there?
Other dude screams, too.
Robot screams.
that would be awesome.
He's going crazy.
Eh.
Oh, he's remembering Bob. Okay.
Christmas morning.
He's going to his happy place.
But see, this is Disney wanting to be 2001, basically.
Right.
And this is what you get.
Yeah.
Now, for all
that's
the
cool.
knocks we gave John Barry, for all the knocks we gave him up to this point, this music cue right here is stupendous. This is a beautiful, like, 5.5 minute cue. That's one of his best, I think. It's just a cool cue where this thing goes. And this whole visual montage, I just dig it.
Mixture of gas and space particles, pressure near the black hole, and gravity simulates an atmosphere.
Someone hit
him. Well, now, however they did this effect, actually, the matte lines are really, really good.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I like just the effect of the...
The wind?
Of the wind, of the, just everything.
So it's Reinhardt.
In case you didn't know it was wind, it's on the captions. Wind rushing.
It's Reinhardt.
And he's crazy.
Now we merge the two.
Mm-hmm.
What?
They start kissing.
They're one and the same.
Oh, no.
Here's the kissing scene.
This is getting really strange.
This whole montage, it's really ambitious for Disney. And this is what you call a Maximilian shell.
Lord.
Oh.
I am the now, king of the crab people.
The
what
shot.
Is this?
Watch where this shot goes.
This is Dante's Inferno.
Yes, and watch where this shot goes. From where it starts to where it ends is a very ambitious technical
yeah,
shot.
That's true.
Because I don't understand.
They had to.
I don't understand where we are right now.
Right, it's too.
Well, that's okay.
This is very abstract.
You'll get it.
Oblique.
Oh,
he's in
hell.
Hello. So Max is in hell and he's in
Max
hell.
Max is the devil. He's, you know?
He's the devil and he rules
Max
hell.
Was the devil?
Maybe he's the devil.
That's what I got out of it at 11 years old.
I don't even remember.
So we have our flame effects with our model work, and then we have these guys walking in on their little conveyor belt.
And
we, look where the camera goes, though, through here.
Oh, yeah.
It goes past, under, and then we see this stuff. It's awesome.
Ooh, that is a good shot.
I didn't get that this was hell, but okay.
As you don't get this as hell?
I didn't get that this was hell back then, but
Oh my gosh, totally.
This is kind of, where did this come
these
from?
These are all the lost souls, exactly. And those are all the ones that he enslaved on the ship that he...
Where did this...
all lost souls.
I understand, but where did this, I mean, how did it get here?
A vaguely human
looking
image.
It's spiritual. Black hole is a portal to heaven and hell.
Vaguely looking human image at the bottom, like it's bent backwards or something. Creepy.
And the shot just continues. It's really awesome.
But I mean, do you understand when I say... Mm-hmm. How did we wind up here? We were in a science fiction film, and now we're in basically a theological
they
film.
They took the black hole to lead you to a spiritual place.
And that's
place.
One of the things that was weird about this movie for Disney, is because it has some sort of spiritual themes here at the end in particular.
I can see the spiritual theme.
And look, an angel.
I can see the spiritual theme.
This is our heavenly portal.
But what I'm saying is like it comes out of left field.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
They really fell short in what they and they it was rushed and they said, "Okay, just slap it together montage. John Barry go to town. We're done."
I thought we were going to the Emerald City until the angel showed up.
Well, this reminds me of All That Jazz, the end.
Oh. Yeah.
Or Logan's Run.
Showtime.
All That Jazz.
Or Excalibur.
At the end of the film when he's going through essentially
doesn't
the tunnel
Excalibur
towards Jessica
Lange. Kind of
which
thing?
Excalibur, no. I'm not sure.
All That Jazz.
Oh, the probe made it. Wow. I just remember being a little kid and being so confused right now.
Yeah. Why do I feel so damp?
Yeah.
Now you got to think, okay, this is a happy ending. They're trapped in here in the middle of the far reaches of space.
Is there any such thing as a happy ending when we're talking about black holes?
Two guys, a girl, and a robot?
There shouldn't be.
And a pizza place.
No, there shouldn't be.
We're talking about
when the black hole.
Hole
is part of the equation, there's no happy ending.
Or maybe there always is.
And they
is
told
a
John
ending.
Barry, wrap it up, do a big triumphant ending, and he goes to town right here. I love this ending musically.
Well,
here's your black space.
I think the whole thing is that they'll find a planet, like there. That's a planet right there.
Notice that the space is black. Or black.
Normal space.
Normal space.
It's blacker, yeah.
Where's I feel like I should say alien.
Yeah, that's bad special effect. But,
well,
the idea is that they're going to the planet, and they'll land on the planet, and they'll live, and she'll basically have to have babies with both of them.
Well, you have to do it that way, yeah.
Or with Vincent.
And with Vincent.
Yeah, Vincent doesn't
if he's
do that,
got so. ESP, who knows what else he has.
No, he'll know exactly what's going on in her mind, though, when it's happening.
Right?
There were a lot of people in the audience right here that just went,
huh?
Really?
What?
Yeah, you see.
I don't. Where do you want to eat?
Yeah, exactly. you're
you
dead.
You see the visit to hell. See
Peter Ellenshaw.
The visit to hell. My point about the visit to hell is that there was no setup for it, other than he mentions Dante's Inferno is mentioned at the very beginning, but it's like a left turn. Like what? In other words, it would have been better if it flipped around. They went to here, and then we see. What's his face? And it winds. Well, I don't even care.
Well, he
got to care. It's a commentary.
Yeah. He did make a reference. That's a good point.
Yeah,
he did make a reference
whatever.
To eternal life or immortality.
Welcome to whatever, Grok.
You know, Grok.
Well,
movie.
Okay, no, I know he made a reference, but the whole thing. Okay, it was all theoretical, and the point is, in a way, what they're suggesting is that it, somehow it was made concrete in some kind of way. We're seeing something beyond life.
Yeah.
That he experiences as opposed to what they experience, which is obviously a normal environment. In other words, they go to another space. They go into our physical space, where he goes to what's essentially, I guess, metaphysical.
Metaphysical
space, which had not been set up that it was dealing in In other words, if they were having hallucinations on the ship of metaphysical events, that couldn't possibly, in other words, then it would set it up for this is where he winds up in the worst metaphysical situation, then I'd buy it. The point is,
that would be interesting.
I don't, you know, I don't disagree with the ending. It's just the setup
didn't justify it. There was no, it wasn't a payoff for
anything. I have no problem with him being in hell and being inside and possibly the suggestion that he was this or that. It's just as long as you lead up to it. And that, in that sense, Event Horizon, which I've never seen, which I guess deals with going...
It did. It set it up because you saw what happened to the previous crew, but in a physical sense. So when crap started happening to the new crew, then it sort of
But it was more of a physical, psychological reality where they're going crazy, as opposed to here, which the suggestion is that there is a theological reality, a metaphysical reality that you could go to that could become a reality, as opposed to... We're just going to go crazy.
If they had put some sort of hallucinations, even just for a moment or two, of the people in the ship, you know, experienced suddenly while they're on the ship, things are a little odd, or they momentarily lose their balance and have some sort of hallucination, just one or two times, that would have actually made that ending really pay off.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, even in Solaris, which kind of touched on this different things. I mean, I didn't see the original, the Tarkovsky. But I saw the Soderbergh one, which I thought was fine. The whole point is that they're close to this planet, which is a living being, and actually makes what's in our minds come to life, and then it attains physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
A different take on that. But, I mean, it was just Solaris is its own thing. I'm just saying, here with that ending, it needed the setup, which is if you don't set it up, then you're like, huh? But then also, if you look at it, once again, you have the robots. Was this for kids? If it was for kids, why are you going that direction? What kind of film are you making?
Mm-hmm.
You have the little robots, you don't go to hell.
Well,
I mean, I'm sorry, you just don't.
Honestly, I don't think it was made for kids. I think this was Disney wanted to do something a different direction, but they were afraid to give up the Disney-ness.
Yeah. I think they played it safe and they split their bet for both camps. Doing that, you cancel out.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't win.
It's as much of a risk in transition they felt business wise they could go at that point. So since you split your bet that way, it cancels each other out. You don't satisfy either as much as you could.
True.
Demographic.
This year, they played it safe. This was the 13th. What did you say? The 13th highest grossing film of that year that it was released.
Yes, it was.
Which is not a tank, but it's not great. And it could have been better.
$36 million domestic.
Right.
In 1979. I mean, that's nothing to scoff at.
But it cost him $26 million essentially. So you know, not big money, but it's a 30% return.
Right. But not a tank. I mean, as a transition film, yeah. Okay.
Sure. And you know,
and we're here watching it now, so
I'd love to see this movie that's in our memory, and you've
brought it, and you brought it, and you said, hey, let's do this. So I mean, obviously there's a place for it. There is something to like about it, and for me at least, there are some elements that go like, okay,
yeah.
Right,
even as a transitional film, it is important in that. You know, in that that's what it is. It's kind of important because of that.
Hey, they want to remake it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it has kernels of a really cool film.
Absolutely.
There are ideas in there that could develop the heck out of it, and you could have a really cool movie.
If
you don't play it safe.
Exactly.
That's like the Neptune Factor.
Right.
Well, and, just and like it, yeah.
Never seen that either.
Oh, dude.
Don't
just stay
worry.
Away.
Okay. Well, then I'll go back to this. I think to reiterate what I was saying earlier, if you take out the goofy little cute robots,
yes,
you fix the dialogue a bit, and you continue with the score the way it was, and just make those little references, like Jim was saying, to the ending, you'd have something that's almost Kubrickian in feel and in scope. Like, it, you know, ending with a metaphysical weird ending and some dark weird stuff that goes on, and I don't know. It would have been really, really cool.
If they get around to remaking it, I'll be very interested in seeing if they can really sort of achieve what it could have been.
It depends who they are. You know,
well, of course.
If it's a group of, you know, I have tremendous respect for, I'd get excited, you know. But if it's some, well, then I'd be,
Well, it's going to be Disney.
Oh, Disney's thinking of remaking it?
Disney owns this.
Disney owns
I didn't know
it,
if, you know.
Oh, totally.
It'd be a transfer of something. Or,
no, okay. Disney gives up nothing.
Yeah, that's true. And film geek stuff, one of the stunt people was Bill Couch, who was the main stunt guy in Logan's Run.
Oh, yeah. And, what about that?
The music score was mixed by Dan Wallen, who recorded and mixed the Omega Man score.
Hey-o.
I like him already.
Dan Wallen's done a lot of music scores. He was known for close miking.
Hmm.
And he does a lot of good stuff that's aged well over the years because of the way he recorded stuff.
Close miking?
Yeah.
What is close miking?
Instead of a room sound where you have mics far away from sections of the orchestra and it has an ambient hall sound to it, he put mics close to the instruments and individual sections of the orchestra. Oh. So you had much more presence.
Mm-hmm.
And you could mix and you could play with it mix wise.
Right. Well, yeah, you get a pure better sound. You don't have to. You're not stuck with
that. That's where they take actually different parts of the orchestra and they'll like actually put
individually mics.
And they'll put screens in between them.
Yeah.
So that the sound is not coming over from the other instruments.
Right.
Got it. Oh, wow. Okay.
So he actually he close mic'd the Omega Man and it's much better for it if you listen to the film score monthly soundtrack of it.
Hmm.
Anyway, just geek stuff.
I think we're going to do that tonight.
Interesting.
I can hear it right now in my head.
Interesting side note, this like menu screen is totally the moment right before the monitor falls on.
Yeah, the monitor's falling.
Didn't realize that before.
Although it looks like he could have a microphone here and he could be like,
right?
You know.
Now, of course, you know, American Idol, incredibly ironic is if we had an earthquake or something right now and the monitor we're looking at were to fall over.
Right, exactly.
Ooh.
None of us would ever forget
that. Coincidence?
Or would it be a metaphysical occurrence because we're even considering a black hole in our minds today?
It's not even funny.
Sarge loves his flat screen. Yeah.
This is where Sarge goes.
Well, I see his point.
I know you can be funny.
But it's not funny.
It is a cool little menu as far as the animation of the black hole.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Little occasional star.
Actually, I gotta say the animation of this black hole is better than the one in the movie.
Well,
and we should say that we're watching the Disney DVD release. Anchor Bay released one like in 1999, and it was non-anamorphic. It was a 4x3 letterboxed DVD.
I'm sure.
So your resolution suffered for it, but they
had
a 5.1 remix on the sound, but Disney came out with anamorphic 16x9 5.1.
Excellent.
And this is what we're watching right now.
Thank you, Disney. Disney, you done good.
Yay.
So all black hole fans can enjoy this movie.
That's me.
And me.
I love me some black hole.
Indeed. Not all the time, every day, but every now and then.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta have me some black hole.
I just have
once in a while.
No idea what to say at this point. So
it's been a long time.
I
haven't enjoyed the black hole in some years.
Years.
See, now you remember what you're missing.
Yeah, well, I think 32, I think I can wait another 32 years. Okay.
not me.
On that auspicious note, I think we're going to call it a day. All right.
When it comes to holes, once you go black.
You don't go back.
No, you go crazy.
Oh.
You go crazy.
I just have nothing else to say.
This has been great.
This has been
indeed
awesome. I'm glad we did this so we can say I am glad we did this.
Yeah, it's a good chance to revisit this. It's always a treat.
Mm-hmm. Nostalgia is always fun for me. So.
And this is nostalgia. So
definitely
of a different time. But we'll do a more recent movie next or something like that. I don't know. We'll find out. Anyway, on that note, we are going to, like I said, call it a day. So this has been
Jim Usterman.
And
Duncan K. Fraser.
And
Tim McMillan.
And Serge Dolpierre. And this has been Film Grok.
Film Grok.